Chapter 13 Sorrow and Solace. Saint-Guillaume was a monastery, but it was still passed for a fortress in a pinch. The structure crowned a steep rise, unassailable save by the thin road winding up to its walls. On either side, the ground dropped away in sheer cliffs, the Delaine River branching away from the Volta at the fork and flowing toward the sea. The walls were pale limestone, battlements crusted with grey snow. Murder holes looked out like dark eyes on the ascent beneath. Around the walls stood a sea of shanties and tents, common folk seeking shelter in the monastery's shadow by the look. Saint-Guillaume stood, silent and imperial, a monolith to God's majesty in this wilderness. But I knew as soon as I caught the scent on the wind, something is wrong, Rafa murmured. We quickened our pace, the ache in my belly and in the back of my eyes worsening as the smell of stale blood thickened. Drawing nearer, I saw that those tents and shanties were all empty, and dark shapes hung on the walls, wagon wheels lashed to the battlements with iron chain. Upon them, nailed upside down so that their souls would be steered toward hell, hung the bodies of a dozen men in the same pale robes as old Rafa wore. The songs of fat, sable crows hung on the wind with the stench of death. The priest breathed deep, eyes welling with tears. What devilry is this? Gabe, Chloe whispered, drawing her silver steel. I hauled Ashtrinka from her sheath, my grip tight.
There are 7 quarts of blood in a full-grown man. Did you know that?
That I did, I murmured.
Although it depends on whether one uses the Eladeini or the Nordland quart, I suppose. The commonly accept...
Ash, I growled. Eyes open, eh?
I have no eyes, she whispered.
I glanced to Saoirse as she slung kindness off her back. Phoebe was a bloody shadow at her side, the lioness's hackles rippling as we drew up to the gates. They were broad, ironclad, carved with the circle of the wheel. But they creaked open at my touch and the slayer and I exchanged a grim glance. Rafa, Chloe, I said, stay here with Dior. Phoebe loped inside, silence itself, and Saoirse and I followed with Bellamy behind. Stepping into a broad bailey that was quiet as graves, I could taste soot, rot, strong spirits. Buildings rose either side of us, the arched vaults of a library to the west, dormitories and distillery to the east. Ahead, the bailey opened into a broad, round garden, now snow-clad and silent. The great circle of a cathedral stood at the heart of it, all limestone and thin stained-glass windows. Beautiful mosaics depicting the lives of the martyrs were set in the stone at our feet. But they were stained now, old blood soaked into the tiles.
A monastery? Ashtrinka asked. Or a mausoleum?
More bodies. Dozens and dozens. Most dressed in monk's robes. They'd been dead a week or so by the look, left to rot where they fell. The floor was thick with rats, black-eyed and plump. Crows sat upon the bodies, pecking at treasures in half-frozen troves. More men were strung up on the walls in here, inverted like those poor bastards on the battlements.
Blade work,
Bellamy reported, kneeling by one of the bodies. The men on the walls looked flayed to the bone. I spat the taste of death off my tongue, my belly aching. Tortured and left to bleed out.
What in God's name happened here, Gabriel?
A massacre. Silver Saint. I looked to Saoirse, standing on the battlements above the gates. The slayer was pointing to the bodies and bloodstains on the bailey floor. It wasn't until I climbed the stairs beside the gatehouse that I understood what she saw. From the ground it appeared a simple carnage, but from on high, there was a method to this madness. Stomach turning, I realized the corpses were arranged in a pattern, a grim signature in dead meat.
Flower and flail, flail and flower,
I nodded. Nael, Angel of Bliss.
This is the work of the Holy Inquisition,
Bellamy whispered.
Oh, dearest God.
I glanced downward at the moan, saw old Raffer in the gateway, dark skin blanched with grief. He stumbled into the bailey, holding the wheel at his throat so tight I thought the silver might bend.
Oh, Heavenly Father, what hell is this?
He ran to the closest corpse, the rat scattering. Falling to his knees, he turned it gently, a long shuddering moan slipping over his lips.
Oh, no, Alphonse.
He turned to another body, just a boy by the look, and Rafa's face crumpled like old vellum in a tightening fist.
Jamal, Jamal.
He seized hold of the body, rotting and lolling in his arms.
What is this? What madness is this?
Rafa.
Chloe ran to the old man's side, horrified. The priest clutched her, spittle on his lips as he began to come apart at his seams.
Oh, Rafa, Rafa. Chloe, this is Jamal. He writes poetry. He... Oh, God. Oh, God.
Dior stood at the gates, sleeve pressed to his lips. A bitter wind blew in from the valley below, the boy's magic frock coat billowing about him as he met my eyes. And he knew it as sure as I did, as sure as the dark sun sinking toward the horizon must set. Every single person in this monastery had been slaughtered. And somehow, some way,
"This is because of me," he whispered.
The slayer took the boy's scarred hand.
"Don't see that flower."
And as Dior met Saoirse's eyes, I saw tears welling in his lashes with the truth none could deny. "Saoirse," I murmured, "stay here and watch the others. I'll look for survivors." Rafa began howling, gut-deep animal sobs. I shared a glance with Chloe as she pressed the old man to her breast, hushing and rocking him like a mother might. The atrocity of it all was etched in her eyes, bloodshot and brimming, and my jaw was clenched as I lifted Ashtrinka and strode into the library. The door was burned to char, old smoke in the air. Ashes danced about my boots, windows blacked with soot. My heart sank, some part of me aching worse than I had at the sight of those slaughtered men. The sword in my hand whispered, silver and full of sorrow.
Blasphemy.
Books. Thousands of books. Brass-trimmed codices. And woodblock cuts. Vellum scrolls and parchment tomes, each illuminated by loving hands. And they'd been hurled like dross to the library floor, and there set ablaze. Every one of them. Burned to fucking ashes. I knelt by the charred pile, flipping through ruined pages. The knowledge of geniuses, holy men and heathens, thousands of truths and thousands of lies, each of them a story worth the telling. And now there were nothing but soot in my mouth as I whispered, "A life without books is a life not lived." Searching the other buildings, I found only bodies in the leaving of lives undone. Plates with half-finished meals, a partly woven wreath in a monk's cell, never to be completed. I trudged out of the empty cathedral, my thirst stabbing at the relentless scent of old, wasted blood. Fountains carved in the likeness of angels spilled brackish water into long ponds. Beyond the cathedral, a tall wall ran along the lips of the cliffs. Beyond it, a drop waited, perhaps 150 feet, down to the frothing rivers below. Rafa stood atop it, looking down into those grey, freezing waters. As I walked to the battlements beside him, the old priest met my eyes. He clutched the wheel strung about his neck, rubbing the silver between his fingers. His face was harrowed, cheeks wet with tears. I said not a word. I'd none in me for horror like this. And then, music. It began soft at first, a few notes echoing on blood-stained stone. But the chords slipped together into a bar, and the bar wove itself into a tune, and soon I stood silent and amazed as that smattering of notes reached into the awful stillness and filled it. Young Bellamy was sitting up on the wall playing his lute. But not just a song, a spell. began in the string-struck spiral of a melancholy refrain, but ending, shivering upon my skin and loosing the anchors on the whole of my heart. It was a song I'd never heard like of, a song that might make stones weep and the wind cease its sighing for fear of missing one gentle, soul-sick moment. It was ache and longing, fulsome and wanting, each swell and shift sweeping you higher as it spoke, through no tongue of man or way as weak as words, a truth beyond telling. A sorrow-sweet circle, like the pearl-white crescent of angel wings, curving upward toward crescendo and then down, soft and softest, back to those same few ember-warm notes that began it all. It whispered at the edge of hearing, and it pressed lips smooth as silk to your aching brow, and told you that though all things must have their ending, so too must then end darkness, and here, now, in this bright and blessed moment, you were alive and breathing. Bellamy struck one final chord, like the warmth of a kiss lingering after the lips have left your own, and he hung his head and was still. Chloe sat with face upturned, weeping. Rafa and I had followed the song back to the Bailey, entranced, Dior mopping his lashes on his sleeve. Even Saoirse was pouring at her eyes. And reaching up to my cheeks, I was astounded to find them wet. But somehow, no sadness in my heart. Seven martyrs, I breathed. That was beautiful, Bellamy, Chloe whispered. Merci, Sir Sauvage. Does it have a name? Bellamy's fingers trailed along his silver necklet, lingering on the sixth of the musical notes strung upon it. A soothsinger must pen seven songs to be considered a master by his peers in the Opus Grandi. Seven songs through which they might speak the truth of the world. That was my sixth. Sorrow and solace. I shook my head, looking Bellamy over with new eyes. And your seventh? The young man smiled, gently putting his lute away.
I have not found it yet, Silver Saint. That is why I left my Augustin and my Empress Divine. To sing the truth of the world, I must see it first. And when I find that song, to her arms I shall return.
A strange silence fell then, windswept, yet somehow warm. And into it, Dior spoke the question burning in everyone's mind.
What are we going to do now?
Chloe and Bellamy looked to me. Rafa stared yet at the carnage around us.
There are no horses in the stables, I sighed. But there's some food yet unspoiled in the refectory. Vodka in the distillery. Things will look less dark with something hot in our bellies.
I glanced at Chloe. Mayhaps you and Dior could help Rafa cook a meal, sister. Chloe met my eyes and nodded.
Busy hands, busy minds.
She walked across the carnage to Rafa, standing still and silent. Taking the old priest's arm, she murmured, and he blinked as if remembering where he was, allowing himself to be led away, beyond the arched oaken doors and out of sight. Bellamy came down from the walls. Saoirse joined me as Phoebe drifted out of the gate like smoke. I laced my collar up about my face, looked from soothsinger to slayer. Let's get burning.
Chapter 14. Liathi. The stink of charred meat was thick on my tongue. We'd set the bodies burning a few hundred yards down the hill, smoke drifting skyward into thickening snows. I was throwing the last of them on the pyre. A boy, maybe 12 years old, when Phoebe came bounding back up the road. The sun hadn't yet fallen. The lioness moved in a soft blur through the long shadows, all golden eyes and rust-red fur. Saoirse knelt in the frost as the beast loped up to her and circled once, growling, tail lashing side to side. The slayer's eyes narrowed and she looked at once to me.
Strife coming.
Danton. She shook her head, slung her axe off her back.
The other one.
I looked down the hill, jaw tightening as I saw a faint spot of blood red stalking toward us through the falling grey. The monastery is holy ground. Both of you,
Get back inside, now. I glanced to Saoirse, flashed her a small smile. Pretty please, with sugar on top. The Slayer scoffed and we retreated back through the gates. Bellamy stood on the battlements with a tallow-soaked quarrel loaded in his crossbow and a burning barrel beside him. I waited with Saoirse just inside the open gate, armed and ready. The bodies were gone, but the scent lingered, the knuckle-deep clawing of old blood on the back of my throat. The thirst was a constant pain now, my fangs grown long in my gums. But I pushed thoughts of blood aside as best I could, watching that figure come on like wolf to wounded deer, until she stopped but a few dozen yards from the walls. The high blood stood in the dying light, locks of dull midnight blue parted about her face, running thick to her waist. She wore her long red frock coat and tight black leathers, silken shirt parted from her pale chest. Her face was obscured by that porcelain mask, black lips and dark, cold lashes. She was slender, tall, just a maid when she was murdered. But her eyes were bleached with time, a dead thing's eyes, drained of all light and life. Looking to Bellamy on the wall above, Saoirse and me waiting just beyond the threshold, she flipped her frock coat hem back and gave a formal, strangely masculine bow, like gentry at court. Her voice was soft as shadows, marred by that slight slurring lisp. "Good evening, monsieur, mademoiselle, chevalier." I glanced to the sun on the still warm horizon. Not yet, it's not. The vampire looked past me to the buildings behind. "Where is the child?" "You've got balls, bitch. Coming to holy ground with the sun yet up."
"The one who comes behind us will not be so polite as to ask at all. But we will repeat ourselves once."
Those pale eyes fixed on mine.
"Where is the child?"
Phoebe bared her teeth in a soft snarl as Saoirse rested kindness on her shoulder.
"I dare ye step across that threshold to look for him, leech."
The vampire didn't blink, but my eyes were now fixed on the sword in her hand. The weapon was gently curved, long, graceful as its mistress. When I'd seen it in the dark by that watchtower near the Umdir, I thought the blade had simply been soaked red with the blood of the wretched she'd killed. But now, with bones burning and tongue parched, I realized the sword wasn't just drenched in blood. It was made of blood. Her blood. "Who are you?" I demanded. The vampire bowed again, deeper this time.
"You may call us Liathi."
High in the reaches of a lonely tower, a swiftly scratching pen fell suddenly still. The last silver saint drained his glass to the dregs as the historian of Margot Chastain, first and last of her name, undying empress of wolves and men, blinked once. Jean-Francois's voice was still sweet as smoke, but a fury boiled beneath his honey-smooth tones.
"Liathi."
Gabriel leaned forward to refill his glass.
"Oui. I knew you were a fool, De Leon. Yet the mind still boggles to know you name me leech, whilst having kept company with the queen of them. To think of..."
"Careful, cold blood. You want the truth of this tale. Best let me have the telling of it. What you know and what you think you know are two different beasts entire." The vampire scowled.
"As you like it."
Gabriel raised his goblet. "Awfully generous of you."
"You may call us Liathi,"
the vampire said, bowing.
"Though we suspect you care less for who and more for what. And we have no time, even for so small a thing as why. Danton Vos is scant hours behind us. He has been tracking you since the Delayen, and every maggot-ridden foul blood for miles has been gathered to his pale banner. And when he arrives, at the edge of night, the beast will murder you all and take the cup in his father's name. The child has but one chance to survive."
Liathi combed a long black lock from colorless eyes.
"Us."
Saoirse scoffed.
So concerned with Dior's well-being, are ye?
We have guarded your steps for weeks now. An Inquisitor's cohort out of Sul-Iram laid low by our hand. Another from Leon. The bloody band who committed the carnage upon which you stand has eluded us. But since word of the ruckus you caused in La Chame reached the Tower of Tears, the entire Inquisition has been brought to bear against your little company.
She tilted her head, eyes narrow behind her mask.
Why do you suppose you have seen neither hide nor hair of them?
I sniffed hard, spat thick. I can smell your bullshit from here, leech.
We have eternity.
The cold blood sighed, tossing her silk scarf over her shoulder.
And yet, not a moment more to waste on nonsense such as this.
Well, I'd invite you in, but holy ground and all.
Law the Fifth?
She slurred. I nodded, fangs glinting. Even the dead have laws. Bloody sword in hand, blood-red frock coat flowing about her, the vampire slowly walked up to Saint-Guillaume's gates. And despite the knowledge that this bitch couldn't enter, I still drew Ashdrinker from her scabbard with a crisp ring of razor-sharp metal. The monster's eyes flickered to the dark star steel, the jagged edge where the blade's tip had snapped free.
Never trust a woman who hides her face, Gabriel.
Never mistake a monster for a woman, Ash.
Aye, beware this one.
I needed no warning, sure and true. I could feel the power in this thing, that bloody blade and the darkling magic that had made it. Questions to which I had no answers were whispering in the back of my mind. But no matter the age, no matter the potency, no cold blood could set foot on sanctified ground. Such was the law of Almighty God himself. Laethe brought the toes of her knee-high boots to the monastery's threshold. She looked about her, eyes running the length and breadth of the gate. Chill wind blew a strand of midnight blue across her mask and she brushed it behind her ear. And then she stepped right across the threshold.
What the fuck?
I breathed.
Lichery,
Ashdrinker whispered. I looked to the blade in the monster's hand, those unanswered questions ringing louder in my head. And I gave one voice, eyes on the vampire as I whispered,
Sanguimancy. So out of his depth.
Laethe looked at me with something close to pity.
'Tis a wonder you can still breathe at all, Gabriel.
Saoirse raised her beautiful axe and Bellamy lit the arrow loaded in his crossbow, Phoebe growling as she circled the vampire's flank. Laethe seemed completely undaunted by any of us, looking instead to the refectory doors Dior was hidden behind.
You play a game you cannot win,
Laethe told us, soft and poisonous.
Bring us the child now, and we will allow the rest.
The vampire stepped back as Saoirse swung her axe, the blade skimming barely a whisker from her chin. Silent, swift, Laethe sidestepped Phoebe, the lioness's claws catching that blood-red coat and shredding it like paper. I shouted warning as the vampire struck back, her bloody blade scything towards Saoirse's throat. The girl raised her axe to block, but the vampire's blade simply flowed around the girl's guard like liquid and reformed on the other side, leaving a splash of red on the haft as it kept cutting right for Saoirse's neck. The girl's eyes widened. She bent backward, that bloody blade slicing two of her braids neat as a razor. Overextended, Saoirse squealed as the vampire's boot crashed like thunder right between her legs, sending her tumbling across the bloodstained tiles. Bellamy fired, but Laethe sliced the burning arrow from the air. Ashdrinker hissed and the vampire swayed, Phoebe leaping at her legs again. The monster moved, sinuous and swift, rolling aside and back up to her feet as that crimson sword flashed toward my chest. But I raised Ashdrinker, blood and blade ringing like steel as I blocked her strike.
Well, well,
Ash whispered. I caught a glint of surprise in the cold blood's eyes. Her blade had flowed around Saoirse's axe like water, but Ashdrinker had stopped it dead.
and the smug bitch staggered as my riposte caught her right across the cheek of that painted mask. Porcelain shattered, the cold blood flashing backward, coat flowing about her slender body like smoke. Her mask had broken away, only her eyes still covered, and I looked in horror at the thing beneath. The skin on the lower half of her face was gone. She had no bottom lip, sharp teeth sitting in blue-grey gums, mangled flesh clinging to pale bone. Under her silk scarf, I could see the muscles of her neck exposed. It was as if someone had grasped a fistful of her throat and torn the flesh away in one long strip up and over her chin. I saw fury break through the ice of her eyes as she looked at the broken mask on the stone at her feet.
"You dare?" she snarled.
Bellamy fired another burning arrow, and again the vampire moved like water around a river-smooth stone. Laiathi brought her wrist up to her mouth, fangs piercing her marble skin. Blood welled from the wound, bright and beautiful as the vampire flicked her wrist and spoke a word, inverted, thrumming with power. And before my wandering eyes, that sluice of ruby red formed itself into a long flail, as solid as the bloody blade she still carried. The scent of it gripped my aching belly, my hunger surged as Laiathi spoke.
"You should have stuck to chasing, but..."
Phoebe roared and pounced at the high blood's chest, but Laiathi was the swifter, twirling beneath yet another burning shot from Bellamy and lashing out at me. I fended off a half dozen sword blows, groin, chest, throat, but that crimson flail caught me about my forearm, and I felt myself swept off my feet, flung across the courtyard and smashing a fountain to dust. Still wrapped up, I roared as she slung me again, down into the floor, teeth rattling in my skull as I shattered the mosaic beneath me.
"Fuck's sake, shoot her, Bouchette!"
The soothsinger fired again, striking close enough this time that the flaming shot sheared through a long lock of midnight hair.
"God damn it, she's too fast! Cut thyself free, ye bloody fool!"
I lashed out with Ashdrinker, severing the bloody flail in a spray of ashes. The high blood sent me sailing backward, black stars bursting as I struck the wall and crashed to the floor. Laiathi ducked another flaming shot, that skinless face snarling as Phoebe finally sank her claws in. The lioness tore long slashes through the cold blood's leathers, the pale flesh beneath, and Laiathi struck back with her fist, pounding Phoebe's head into the stone. The big cat buckled, groaning. The vampire raised her blood blade. Saoirse's mouth opened in a scream.
"Phoebe, move!"
As the blade flashed down like the bloody hand of...
"God!"
Laiathi gasped, staggering backward. The vampire stared bewildered at the 4.5 feet of star metal protruding from her chest. Ashdrinker quivered, shaking from the force I'd put behind the throw, enough to shatter the monster's ribs and burst out through her back. Laiathi's flesh sizzled like sausage on a skillet, and she staggered, her own bloody blade slipping from her fingers and splashing in a long crimson puddle on the floor. She looked up at me, wobbling now to my feet.
"You..."
Laiathi groaned, hands smoking as she closed them about Ashdrinker's hilt and dragged the sword from her blackened chest. She let my blade fall to the stone with a bright clang, fingers burned to charcoal twigs, dead eyes boiling as she spat ashes.
"We should kill you for that, you ungrateful. Know my name, ye sinners, and tremble,"
came a fierce cry,
"for I am come among thee as a lion among lambs."
A silver bright light sheared into the courtyard, and Laiathi flinched like she'd been slapped in her mutilated face, charred hands held up to her eyes. Turning, I saw Chloe and Rafa both stalking across the stone, the sister brandishing her silver steel sword, the priest holding his wheel, burning with a light that was almost blinding.
"Leave this holy place,"
Chloe shouted, raising her blade in both fists. Laiathi spat through bared fangs.
"Wretched fools, you..." "In the name of God and the Blessed Mother Maid," Rafa roared, "I say begone."
The vampire hissed at the priest's command, backing away from that searing light. Her chest was split wide, mask shattered, ribs and hands still smoldering from Ashdrinker's kiss. Rafa cried again,
"I said begone, devil,"
wielding his wheel like a sword. And just as when we'd fought at the watchtower,
Lyathi's body seemed to tremble, exploding into a thousand blood-red moths, now whirring and spinning up into the pale snows. I bent double, spitting blood. And as I watched, that storm of tiny wings rose up through the feeble sunlight and scattered into the gloom. Phoebe stood on unsteady legs, the lioness shaking herself head to tail and snorting blood. Dior came barreling across the bailey, skidding to a halt at Saoirse's side.
"Saoirse," the boy demanded, grabbing her hand. "Are you all right?"
"It's kicked me in the cunny," she hissed.
"Who the hell is that devil?" Dior demanded.
"And how in God's name did she enter holy ground?" Rafa asked.
"She was a blood witch."
Chloe looked at me, green eyes wide.
"Gabe, could she?"
But the good sister's voice failed as I shook my head. I thought the same myself at first. Some foul art dark enough to break even God's law. But looking at the bloody stone at my feet, the stink of burning bodies still hanging in the wind, I'd realized the simple truth. There's no magic at work here, just murder.
Bellamy stood above, crossbow in shaking hands.
"What do you mean?"
I looked around the bloodstained belly of Saint-Guillaume and sighed.
"I mean, how can this ground still be sanctified when it's been soaked with the blood of God's faithful? How could it remain hallowed when defiled in the name of that very same God?"
"The Inquisition," Rafa whispered.
"In murdering the monastery's brethren, flaying and burning and torturing them, those fools profaned this place, soaked it in the blood of innocents and holy men."
I shook my head, retrieving ash drinker from the stone.
"Saint-Guillaume is sacred ground no longer."
"And the doom rides toward it on black, black wings."
Saoirse dragged herself to her feet, wincing. "That bitch said the beast of Vilaine will be at her throat by nightfall. If she spoke truth..."
Chloe looked to me, paling under her freckles.
"How can we hope to stand against Danton without God beneath our feet?"
"We could put those feet to use," Bellamy suggested.
"We could run."
"Cowards never triumph, Bellamy," the Slayer growled.
"They don't die very often either, Saoirse,"
Chloe noted.
I scowled back down the hill. "The one path we have to flee by will lead us straight into Danton's arms. That bastard could track a piece of hay through a stack full of needles. And if he catches us in the open at night time, he'll carve us up like springtime lambs. We've no choice but to make a stand here."
"Said Danton has gathered every wretched for miles," Bellamy protested. "We barely held back a few dozen at Windfale, and that was without a high blood leading them. We've trapped ourselves like bloody rats."
I looked around the group, saw Bellamy's fear seeping into them like poison. Dior's jaw was clenched, all color gone from his face. It was his decision that had brought us to these walls, after all. Chloe was pacing, dragging one hand back through her curls as she looked to the walls behind us. The sheer cliffs, the hopeless drop into the river 150 feet below. Bellamy spoke again, voice trembling with fear.
"We should never have come here, mes amis."
"Hold your nerve, Bouchette," I growled.
"My nerve?"
The lad scoffed, almost laughing.
"Did you see that monster? She carried a blade made of blood. She turned into a storm of fucking moths. Perhaps such horrors are commonplace for a silver saint, but I'm only a soothsinger. I'm not even a soldier."
"Soldier?" I sighed. "Let me tell you about the soldiers I fought with, Bellamy. All those great battles you sing about. The heroes who fought at Touvet and Bay Sita, Triobailey and Coste. They were boys for the most part. Teenage boys just like you. Stonemasons and carpenters, farmers and fishermen. They fought because they didn't have rich fathers. They fought because they didn't have a piece of parchment with the Emperor's seal to save them. They fought because they had to. And they'd nothing to look forward to afterward, most of them. All they'd be at the end of it was alive. But before every battle I ever fought, I'd look at the faces of those boys, and in their loyalty to each other, in their courage at the sight of those horrors, I tell you, sure and true, I used to see the face of God." I walked to the monastery wall and thumped my fist against it. "We have strong stone around us, Bouchette. Liquor in the cellars and water to be blessed. Holy wheels and silver steel."
I looked around the group,
fire in my eyes. We don't need soldiers to win through this. We need only stand together.
There is, Silversaint, Per Rafa smiled, clutching his wheel tight. There is.
Dior squared his shoulders and nodded. Chloe put her arm around the boy and squeezed tight. Even Saoirse stood a little taller. Bouchette, I want you fetching as much water as you can. Rafa, get to blessing it. Saoirse, start hauling liquor from the distillery. There's barrels of it, pure and strong as sin. Chloe, Dior, I want you looking for tallow, wood, bedding, anything that will burn. We don't have long till sunset, and I want to be ready when His Majesty arrives. I looked at the soothsinger in the lingering still. You've still got your seventh song to write, Bellamy. You're not dying tonight. The company set about it. Dior headed to the kitchens, Saoirse to the cellar, Bellamy following Rafa, still looking shaky. Only Chloe remained. She stood a foot and a half shorter than I, clad in chainmail and silver steel, hands on hips as she smiled. You always did give a rousing speech, mon ami. You haven't lost your touch since the Battle of the Twins. I shrugged, turning away so I didn't have to watch that vein pulsing just below the line of her jaw. Your last song, always pick a crowd pleaser.
Last song?
Still refusing to look at her, I murmured so none might overhear. When Danton arrives, keep Dior close. I'll cut you a way out if I can.
What happened to standing together?
Fuck's sakes, open your eyes, Chloe, I snarled.
I don't...
We're pinned down. Cliffs at our backs, and God knows what coming at our front. Most of the folk in this company can't fight worth a damn, and the ones who can won't be halfway enough. I've had nothing to smoke for days, and Danton won't strike until it's night. All his power, all his strength brought to bear. Odds are about perfect we're all going to die. She licked at dry lips, glancing down the hill.
Do you truly think we've no hope?
Keep Dior close, I repeated. You see a break, fucking run. Chloe chewed her lip, fear finally breaking through that rhyme of eternal optimism. She'd always been a believer, always felt we were meant for greater things. And swallowing hard, she nodded to herself, slipped her gauntlet off her hand and offered me her wrist.
Here then.
My jaw clenched, pupils dilating. What the hell are you doing?
I know it's a sin, she breathed, trembling. But I've given 17 years of my life to this, and the whole empire hangs in the balance of it. So, Gabe, if you need the strength...
My fangs were bright and sharp against my lips. My heart suddenly dashing itself against my ribs so hard it made me gasp. My veins were fire. That thirst rising on crimson wings. To have it offered freely... when it was all I could do to stop myself just taking it. Chloe, get away from me.
Gabriel, I...
Get the fuck away from me. She stumbled back as I roared, her mouth open in shock. I knew what I must look like. Eyes flooded red, canines flashing, the thing in me so close to breaking loose, I could feel it clawing through my skin. But not here. Not like this. I'd promised. Chloe stood aghast as I backed away. She seemed smaller then, closer to the girl I'd once known. There was still fire in her eyes, faith, fury. But there was fear now, too. The fear that comes with knowing the world is much bigger than you could ever be, and that there are simply some truths you'll never understand.
I'm sorry, Gabe, she whispered. I'm sorry I dragged you into this. I'm sorry I took you from Astrid and Patience. I should never have done that.
Hanging her head, she slipped her leather gauntlet back on.
There are a lot of things I shouldn't have done, I suppose. But I did them all for the best. Because I believed in Dior, in you. And I still do. There is nothing, nothing I will not do to see this done.
Staring toward the falling sun, she sighed.
But I'm sorry.
I closed my eyes, saying nothing as she walked away. The beast in me crashed against its bars, howling for me to follow, to take, to swallow just one mouthful, just one fucking drop.
and the awful thing of it was, I knew deep down Chloe wasn't a fool to offer what she had, that I was weak and starving, and I'd need all my strength if ever I hoped to make it through this night alive, let alone best the prince of forever. But I'd made a vow, a promise whispered in the dark, cold as tombs and black as hell, never again. Never again. Jean-Francois ceased his writing, dipped his quill into the ink at his side. A promise to whom, Sylvain Saint? But Gabriel only shook his head. Patience, cold blood.
Chapter 15. A Prince of Forever. We prepared as best we could in the time we had, which is to say, terribly. I'd fought a half dozen sieges before, but never with so little. We had holy water in abundance, and that was welcome news. An elaborate pump ran down the cliff to the depths of the Volta, used by the monks for their daily needs. Bellamy turned the crank as fast as he was able, while Rafa called down blessings on the water, and the courtyard fountains besides. I'd found a little chemist's workshop in the distillery, scattered phials of salpetre and sulphur, enough to mix up a few handfuls of black ignis at least. Saoirse hauled barrels and bottles up from the distillery below. It smote my black and shriveled heart to waste liquor as sharp as this, even if it was fucking vodka. But still we soaked the battlements and forecourt around the gates, sluicing the stone with the stink of high-grade spirits, adding a sprinkle of sawdust from the monastery's coopery for punch. We used all they had, emptying every drop. And yet I saved myself a single bottle, downing it all to dull the pain of my ever-growing thirst. The dark sun was setting now, only a few minutes of feeble light left before night fell like a headsman's blade. I glanced around the company, broken glass in my belly. Saoirse and Rafa looked steady, Bellamy and Chloe a little shaky. Dior was stone. Right, I said. If that Laiathi bitch spat any kind of truth, Danton has gathered every wretched for miles to his side. They'll go where their bloodlord wills them, which means they won't come mindlessly this time. Saoirse, you and I keep them off the walls as long as we're able. But when they break through, and they will, Bellamy lights the spirits with his bow, and we fall back to the cathedral. It's not holy ground, but most of the windows are too narrow to crawl through, and there's only two passages, in and out. Dior chewed a ragged fingernail, then spat. Maggot trap. You what? I asked. It's a grift I thought up with my friends back in La Chame, the boy mumbled. You get a pretty girl, have her flash around a heavy purse in a seedy tavern, leave after one drink. Some pricks bound to follow with intent of relieving her of her coin, probably more besides. But the girl leads the fellow down a blind alley where you and your crew are waiting. And you roll him hard and take everything he's got, then go to sleep content you stomped a bastard who deserved it. Dior shrugged. I called it a maggot trap. And you did this for recreation? Rafa asked. We did it to eat. But there's nothing wrong with enjoying your job. In military terms, it's called a bottleneck, I said. The boy sniffed. My name's better. As you like it. I sighed, waved to the circular building behind us. Now, bad news is, after dousing the battlements, there was only enough vodka left to soak one passage into the cathedral, the westward one. Good news is, in a nice enclosed space like that, and with time to evaporate, spirits that strong will burn like a trencherman's fart in a candle shop. So, when you fall back through the westward door. The wretched will follow, and Dior will be waiting with the spark. And after that? Chloe asked. With fortune, we thin their number enough for me to get my hands on Dant. I gasped, bending double as a spasm of pain ripped through my belly. I could feel my nails stirring at the tips of my fingers, my fangs in my gums. The thirst was all I knew for a moment. The warmth, the scent of the company around me, the thudding pulse of that luscious hot crimson beating just below their skin. Gabe, Chloe asked, are you all right? I'm fucking wonderful. You look like puddled shite, Silver Saint. Saoirse lifted kindness,
her face grim. Leave the bonny prince of forever to me. It's not my fate to die today. Nor tomorrow neither. Bellamy nodded grim.
I will not go to my grave with my song still inside me. Blessings to you all, Chloe said, watching me with wide, worried eyes. May God and Mother Maid and all the martyrs bring us victory over this evil.
I looked to Dior, my stomach still burning. You be ready for my signal, boy.
I'll be ready, hero.
I looked to Rafa. Do me a favor, father.
Ask it, Silversint.
If you should happen to meet our maker tonight, kick him in the cock for me.
Saoirse, Bellamy and I took to the walls, wreathed in the stink of evaporating vodka. Rafa and Chloe stood in the Bailey's guttering torchlight, Dior hidden in the cathedral. The cliffs at our flanks meant there was only one path by which Danton could approach, but as darkness deepened, thick and frozen, I'd no clue if we had strength enough to stop him. And the thirst, great Redeemer, I was so fucking thirsty. Remember, I hissed, retreat through the westward passage into the cathedral, the doors for the dead.
Poetic,
Bellamy muttered.
If we live through this, there's a hell of a ballad in it.
Saoirse's jaw clenched, her grip tightening on Kindness's haft. They come. I looked into the dark, saw a multitude swarming up the hill. Fangs bared, I drew my sword from her sheath, that silver dam on the hilt ever smiling at me.
Good fortune, Ash. Die not on me now, Gabrielle. We've bastard seven to slay, to slay.
They charged towards St. Guillaume, dark figures rushing through the falling night. I counted 100 or more wretched, but against our little company, they may as well have been an army of thousands. And somewhere in the dark, their grim general awaited. I couldn't see him yet, but I could feel him, like a shadow at my back. I'd fought things like him most of my life, and still, a part of me found the thought of Danton Voss utterly horrifying. Not frightening, mind you, just horrifying.
Why? Jean-Francois asked.
Gabriel shook his head. I used to wonder what it was that drove people like him to become the monsters they became. If it was a consequence of all that time, maybe. The need to indulge ever darker desires, just to stave off the crushing boredom of forever. But you live long enough, you look into the mundane murk of people's souls often enough. You see, Danton didn't really become anything. He just had the shackles of consequence removed. Give someone the power to do anything they want, and they'll do exactly that. That's the horrifying part. The only thing holding some folk back from the worst atrocities they can imagine is the fear they might not get away with it. His wretched came on, half rotten and all silent. I watched them, tipping my last few flakes of Sanctus into my pipe. Inhaling red smoke, I closed my eyes, listening to the feet coming through the snows, feeling tiny snowflakes melting cold upon my skin, the faint notes of death and blood in the air, Saoirse's leathers, Bellamy's fear.
Gabriel!
The song of the wind above and the waters below, the weight of the sword,
De Leon!
I opened my eyes, found Bellamy staring at me incredulous as the enemy came on ever closer, dead eyes and rotting tongues, and,
should you not be silver-clad? If never before, we need the Aegis now. At the siege at Touvet, your faith burned so bright the dead were struck blind. At the Battle of Vaisite...
Have you not figured it out yet, Bell?
Saoirse asked.
Figured what out?
The Slayer glanced at me and sighed.
What worth all that pretty ink? What use a conduit for faith, if a man has not a drop of faith left inside him to give?
And then the dead were on us, and there was no more time to talk. Some crashed into the gates and began battering, others flowed up the stonework like water. I lit an Ignis bomb and tossed it over the wall, the powder igniting, nails and scrap metal ripping through the cold bloods. Saoirse and Bellamy rose up, letting fly with holy water and burning crossbow shots, and wretched began to fall. But others yet were climbing, dead eyes and hungry mouths, and soon enough they began spilling over the walls. It was blade work then, and miles of it, running back and forth across the high walk in a desperate attempt to stem the tide. Bellamy backed off along the eastern walk, no longer shooting flame for fear of igniting the liquor beneath us, Searsha and I cutting into the dead. A wizened old man, a skinny lad, a rotten mother with a belly still swollen from the babe she'd been carrying when she was murdered, all fell under Ashtrinker's edge. But an ill feeling was growing in the back of my mind, darkening with every moment. Where the hell was Danton? Bellamy gasped, hand to brow.
I can feel him in my head.
Force him out, Bell, Searsha cried.
I can't.
Mother Moons, where is he? Gabriel! I turned at Chloe's scream, heart sinking. And there I saw him, like a shadow, perched behind us atop the western battlements. A host of wretched were scrambling up the stones around him, dozens of them. And with sinking heart, I realized the dead had used their unholy strength to simply crawl around the cliffs on our flank, completely avoiding the fire traps we'd laid. Clever bastard, I whispered. Back! Rafa raised his wheel, burning silver in the dark. Back now! The foul bloods began spilling down into the bailey, but Chloe and Rafa stood tall, the sister brandishing her silver steel, the wheel in the priest's hands burning like flame. Phoebe pounced upon the first wretched to touch the courtyard stone, tearing it apart as Chloe sliced another off at the knees. I cut down a foul blood on the wall, roared to Searsha. We're outflanked! Fall back!
Bellamy lit his crossbow shot, raising his bow.
He was in my head. He...
Light it, Bouchette.
Searsha leapt off the battlements to the stone below. The gates began to buckle, more wretched spilling up over the walls as Bellamy fired at the high walk under my feet. The liquor and sawdust burst into flames, bright and seething. Wretched fell, flesh catching like tinder, a few hissing in agony as they crashed among their fellows below and set more ablaze. But yet more came on, a relentless starving flood. And so I turned away, eyes upon their general. Fire rising at my back, I charged along the western high walk, set to slay this dark shepherd and watch his sheep scatter.
Danton!
He turned to face me as his flock spilled into the courtyard below. Clad all in black, frock coat and ruffled sleeves, cravats stained with the blood of the last poor wretch he'd killed. The strength of murders centuries deep unfurled in his veins and coiled behind his eyes.
Lay but one hand upon him, Gabriel.
He raised his saber, met Ashtrinker on his blade and turned her aside. I was dimly aware of Bellamy on the eastern walk, firing flaming shots into the courtyard below now. Silver light burned in Rafa's hands as Chloe and Searsha fought side by side. But I had eyes only for my enemy. Our blades sang as we crashed across the high walk, fury twisting my lips into a snarl. Danton's blade sliced my arm and I felt not a thing. Another blow carved my cheek to the bone and I didn't even blink.
You look thirsty, half-breed, he hissed.
You look frightened, leech, I spat.
I like the new nun, a little shorter than the last one. How does she taste?
His strike sent me skidding back across the boards, fangs bared.
No, tell me not, he smiled. I shall learn for myself soon enough.
I heard Chloe scream, Bellamy cry out. More wretched had flanked us, cresting the eastern walk now. The soothsayer was struck from behind, dropping his bow. The dead came at him from both sides, and in desperation he slung his loot off his back, dipped that beautiful bloodwood into the burning barrel beside him, and started swinging it like a club.
Back, you bastards! Back!
They were overrunning us now. Too many. Too clever with this leech lord pulling their strings. Desperate, I threw myself at him, Danton's sword piercing my belly and bursting out my back as at last, my hand closed about his throat.
Yes.
Danton seized my wrist, my fingers brushing his skin. I lunged, snarling but bloated with the kill. Lips red, eyes flooded. The bastard was just stronger than I. And as I felt my bones grinding beneath his grip, I realized how terrible my folly was. I was starving, weak, and he the son of a forever king. Shoulders crowned with all knight's mantle, all his strength, all his power at his command. "Not tonight," he smiled. My wrist snapped like a twig. The blade inside me twisted. I heard Rafa roaring Bellamy's name. "Run! Run!" The soothsinger crying out as his burning lute broke across one corpse's shoulder, and a multitude of dead bore him down. The necklet he wore snapped, musical notes spinning into the night as they sank their teeth into his skin.
"Bellamy!" Chloe cried.
I gasped in anger as Danton flexed, lifting me off the ground, his saber hilt pressed against my belly, his blade buried in my bowels.
"Blood is owed thee, De Leon, and blood shall be wreaked."
An axe crashed into the side of the vampire's neck, landing with the song of splintering stone. Danton snarled, and turning on the spot, he slung me with all his strength. I heard Chloe's scream as I slid off his blade and flew across the courtyard, weightless, tumbling, crashing into the mosaic floor and smashing it like glass. I felt ribs break, tasted blood, black stars in my eyes. Saoirse faced Danton on the battlements, the slayer tearing kindness from the vampire's skin. Her blow would have lopped an ordinary head from its shoulders, split a tree to its roots. But the beast of Velen was an ancient Ironheart, his flesh like stone. Still, his throat was shattered, cracks spreading across his skin like veins through pale marble. And fury lit his eyes as Saoirse slammed her shield into his face and her axe into his belly. The high blood staggered as the slayer came on, furious, fearless. They crashed atop the high walk as Chloe reached my side, bloody silver steel in hand, crying,
"Gabriel, get up!"
She dragged me to my feet, my left arm broken, Ashtrinka barely clutched in my other hand. Above us, Rafa had gone to save Bellamy, wheel held out, the wretched hissing and scattering as the priest reached the soothsinger's bloodied body. My ribs were grinding under my skin, blood in my mouth. But I watched Saoirse twirl, strawberry blonde braids spinning in the air about her as she swung kindness at Danton once more.
"No man can kill me, vampire."
The slayer grinned, feral, face spattered with his blood as she buried her axe into his shoulder.
"And no devil would dare try."
Danton's hand closed around Saoirse's like a vice, her fingers pinned tight on the haft of her axe.
"No man nor devil, I," the vampire said.
He batted her shield aside, drew back his other hand.
"I am a prince of forever."
And lashing out with clawed fingertips, he tore out Saoirse's throat. Blood sprayed, crimson, brilliant. Phoebe looked up from a wretched's torn body, the lioness roaring as her mistress staggered. Chloe reached out across the gulf toward Saoirse, screaming, Rafa watching in horror as Danton threw back his head, laughing as twin fountains of the slayer's blood gushed across his skin. Saoirse stumbled to her knees, leathers drenched red. Her hands were pressed to her sundered throat, her eyes wide with disbelief. Phoebe roared in impossible fury, bounding up the high walk stairs toward her mistress. Rafa had his wheel raised, screaming as he retreated toward the cathedral.
"Chloe! Back! Get back!"
Turning, I saw that the gates had crumbled, Wretched charging on through. Yet more dropped off the east walk atop me, claws and fangs tearing my skin. As I fought, desperate, punching and stabbing, I heard a scream of animal terror, and something heavy flew past me, smashing the oncoming Wretched aside. Jezebel, whipped into a panic by the dead and the flames. The dray had kicked free from the stables, charging like a spear now, through the Wretched and out the broken gates. I couldn't fault her for fleeing, thinking at least one of us might make it through the night alive. But she had bought me precious moments at least, enough to climb to my feet and stagger back toward the cathedral.
"Good luck, girl. Should have given you a better name."
Chloe hauled me backward, hacking with her silver steel. I followed, gasping, swinging Ash Drinker and taking a wretched head off its shoulders, slicing another's hands free of its arms, and with a twist, splitting its torso from its hips. I stumbled, pushing Chloe away from me. Get to the cathedral! I held my last Ignis bomb at the gate, rewarded with a deep roar as the spirit-soaked stones caught fire. Chloe joined Rafa in dragging a bleeding, blood-soaked Bellamy toward the doors for the dead. The young soothsinger was holding his torn throat, whispering,
I will not go to... Phoebe, I roared, get back.
But the lioness paid me no heed, moving in a blood-red blur along the west walk. Danton lifted his head from Searsha's ruins, drenched in the slayer's blood. Reaching up, he tore kindness from his shattered shoulder, the axe wicked sharp and beautiful in his hand. And as Phoebe leapt at him, bloody claws and fangs bared, the beast of Velen hurled that axe with all his unholy strength. The blade sheared through the air, whooshing as it came, Evernot gleaming upon the blood-stained steel as it tumbled over and over and slammed into Phoebe's chest. The she-lion roared and spun mid-air, crashing to the boards, a long trail of gleaming gore in her wake as she skidded along the high walk. Oh, shit, I whispered. The lioness came to rest at Danton's feet, her mistress's axe buried in her ribs. She tried to rise, claws scrabbling at the polished tip of Danton's boot. The beast of Velen seized the lioness by her throat, hauled her up to dangle, limp and twitching before him. And with casual brutality, he wrenched kindness free in a gout of blood and flung the fated blade off the cliff at his back. And raising Phoebe high into the air, he hurled the lioness into the courtyard below, her body shattering on the stone. I could barely walk, arm and ribs broken, guts hanging from the slice in my belly. Rafa and Chloe dragged Bellamy through the doors for the dead, me behind, all Danton's wretched on our tails just as we planned. I could smell sharp vapor, praying Dior was ready for our little maggot trap. Staggering against the cathedral doors, I turned to watch as Danton leapt down from the walls, soaked in Searsha's and Phoebe's endings. He smiled at me, black eyes in a mask of crimson. Fool ye misthink me, De Leon, to fall for so simple a ploy. He lifted a hand, like a conductor before some unholy orchestra. And at his unspoken command, the wretched veered away from our pursuit. Instead of following us mindless through the western entrance, they surged eastward, toward the dawn doors. Smashing against them now, timbers splintering as they spilled inside, a starving, clawing flood of dead meat rushing into the tight corridor beyond. And Dior Lachan stood at the end of it, a lit cigarette in hand.
Bonsoir, maggots, he whispered.
The boy flicked the smoke into the liquor-soaked steel and slammed the door behind him. Vapor exploded, white-hot and roaring through the corridor. The cathedral doors were blown inward, Dior thrown to the stone as a long gout of flame scorched the air over his head, burning corpses, flailing, falling, incinerating Danton's wretched in an instant. Gabriel leaned back and cracked his knuckles. Just as I planned.
Jean-Francois ceased his writing, raised one eyebrow. You said the western corridor was the one set to burn.
That's what I told the others, Gabriel shrugged. You don't live for centuries by charging in blind. I knew Danton would get inside one of their heads before he struck us. But the ability to read minds isn't so useful when those minds have been filled with lies. So, save for Dior, I told my comrades what I wanted my enemy to think. The historian tapped his lip, gave a grudging nod.
Rather clever, De Leon.
Danton didn't think so. The beast of Velen roared in rage, fangs bared as he stalked across the courtyard. His forces were in charred tatters, but the prince himself was barely scathed. And though Ashdrinker hung bloodied in my hand, I'd nothing left inside.
Back, Gabriel, back now, back now.
And so I turned and staggered into the cathedral's belly. It was circular, surrounded by pews, a stone altar at its heart. Stained glass windows ringed the space, only a few inches wide, save one, a life-size portrait of Saint Guillaume in the northern wall, tome in one hand, burning torch in the other. Rafa,
Chloe and Dior were knelt around Bellamy, the boy's hands soaked with blood. The soothsinger's throat and wrists and thighs were all torn, Dior pressing red hands to the wounds.
Bell, he pleaded. Bellamy.
The soothsinger's eyes were open, staring at the ceiling. And though the Redeemer's blood had saved him once before, might bring a soul back from the very edge of death, in fact, that same blood seemed of little use once the soul had flown. And looking into Bellamy's empty eyes, I knew.
No,
Chloe whispered.
No.
Rafa, I gasped, staggering into the room.
Oh God,
he breathed, looking over my shoulder. Danton stood behind me, swathed in shadow. The priest rose to his feet, face grim and spattered with blood. And though he stood years past 60, his back bent and skin wrinkled, Rafa seemed a fucking giant then. Beyond the faith in him I saw fury, burning like heaven's fire as he raised the wheel in his hand. Light flared, silver bright, and I staggered past the priest, falling to my knees in a puddle of Bellamy's blood. The thirst roared within me, and for a moment, just for a second, it was all I could do not to press my face to the stone and lap it up, like a beggar to breadcrumbs. Dior rose up from Bellamy's corpse, spitting at Danton.
You fucking bastard!
The boy took a step forward, held in check by a desperate Chloe.
Dior, no!
The Beast of Valen loomed before us, backlit by the glow of burning corpses. Old Rafa stood tall, dauntless, bathed in the power of his god. They watched each other, priest and vampire, light and dark, flame and shadow, each the other's match. Impasse, Danton breathed. To a fool's eyes, Rafa replied. And you certainly have those. The vampire smiled, red and sensuous. All I could see of him was his face, vulpine, that black widow's beak swept back from his brow, and his hands, ghost pale and blood-stained, as he reached up and straightened the cravat at his throat. I see them in thy mind, priest, with these fool's eyes. Rafa refused to answer, standing with his wheel burning before him. But Danton drifted around the edge of the glow like a hungry wolf circling ancient firelight.
All those dead brothers, he whispered. Alphonse and Jean-Paul, old Tarek and little Jamal, flayed and left for the crows.
If thou hadst not set out in search of the Grail, if thou hadst but stayed here among thy little books, thy tiny words, the Inquisition would never have been unleashed upon thy brethren. The vampire sighed sadly.
They are dead because of thee.
But the old man shook his head defiant.
Speak not their names. Speak not a word to me. I am deaf to all but the voice of the Lord our God. I am his hand upon this earth, and my faith in his love shall waver not an inch at the deceits of a wretched worm like you.
The priest stepped forward, and I watched him wander as Danton wavered.
Go back,
Rafa spat, his voice rich with righteous fury. Go back to the abyss that suckled you, to the loveless father that birthed you, and tell him he may send 100 sons to test me, and I shall best them all. The Lord is my shield unbreakable. He is the air in my lungs and the blood in my veins. And you have no power over me. The Beast of Valen narrowed his eyes, slicked back his hair with one bloody hand.
Thou hast nothing to fear from me, priest.
Nothing at all, vampire.
Danton smiled then, dark and poisonous.
Then cast thy wheel aside.
Rafa blinked, his gaze shifting from the monster before him to the holy circle burning in his hand. I looked between them, bleeding, broken, dread uncoiling in my belly.
Rafa, I whispered.
The Lord is thy shield unbreakable, Danton hissed. Surely then, he will not allow a wretched worm to touch thee.
So throw it aside, priest. Face me, upon even ground. Show me true power. Show me a god who will not let his beloved servant die.
Oh, Mother Maid, Chloe breathed.
Rafa glanced back to the sister, eyes meeting hers. And then and there, the old priest made his mistake. If he had done it, if he'd cast that wheel away and stood undaunted, unafraid, I've no doubt in my mind Danton would have broken like glass. The wheel was just a thing. It was Rafa's faith that mattered. But the priest hesitated. He doubted. He feared. And the glow in the wheel began to die. Just a flicker at first, like a shadow across the black sun. But the priest's eyes grew wide. A tremor passed through his hand. And he looked up to the vampire and saw him, not cowering now, but standing tall, a hungry smile on ruby lips.
"Stay back," Rafa cried. "In the name of God, I command you."
And hollow, drenched in blood, Danton threw back his head and laughed. The vampire took one step forward and Rafa one step back, and with each step, the light in that wheel dimmed further and further still. Chloe moaned in terror, Dior cursing softly as that pale light died, and my heart sank as I saw the last of our hope die with it. The Beast of Velen reached out and closed long clawed fingers around the wheel in Rafa's hand. Pale flesh, sizzling on silver, Danton closed his fist, and the metal crumpled. Rafa opened his mouth, perhaps to pray, perhaps to curse, but the beast's other hand snaked out, seizing the priest's shoulder, and as Rafa cried, "Save me, God," the vampire opened his maw and sank his fangs deep into the holy man's throat.
"Rafa!" Chloe screamed. "And no!" Dior roared,
and mouth filled with blood, teeth gritted, I dragged myself to my feet. Our last bastion had fallen, the priest groaning as the kiss took hold, lifting his arms and throwing them like a drowning man to driftwood, about the shoulders of the thing that was murdering him. Chloe raised her silver steel, screaming in rage, but I grabbed her, stopped her from throwing herself onto that same pyre.
"Chloe, he'll kill you."
I looked about us, to Sangiom's window in the wall behind us, and with the arm that still worked, I hurled Ashdrinker, shattering the glass to splinters.
"Go!"
Dior grabbed Chloe, dragging the sister away, me limping behind. The boys scrambled through the window, pulling Chloe through, and I left a trail of blood as I hauled myself after them, shredding my skin. Chloe was gasping for breath, eyes wide with terror and madness as I picked up Ashdrinker.
"Fly, Gabriel,"
and slipped the blade back into her scabbard. We had nowhere to run, yet I grabbed Chloe's hand and run we did, dragging Dior away from the broken window where Danton now stood, drenched in Circe's and Phoebe's and Rafa's blood.
"I told thee I could follow forever, de Leon."
We backed up the stairs to the monastery walls, the high walk running the edge of the cliffs. The drop loomed behind us, jagged rocks like teeth, 150 feet down into lightless black. Danton was on the stairs now, smiling, a single breath away.
We have to, Chloe whispered. "It's too high," the boy breathed. "The rocks, I can't swim."
I gritted my teeth.
"Take my hand, boy."
And gripping tight, wincing in agony as Chloe seized my broken wrist, I dragged them both up onto the battlements. The dark opened its arms below us, Dior's eyes wide with terror, Danton coming at us like a black wind. Kicking off the railing, I jumped far as I could, Chloe holding one hand, Dior the other. Out into the windswept night, weightlessness and vertigo, the scream rising in Chloe's throat suddenly cut short as a pale hand reached into the brink and seized the collar of Dior's fine magic frock coat. The boy wailed as Danton's fist closed tight, jerking us to a halt. I roared in agony, wounds tearing, broken bones grinding. Chloe shrieked, both our hands slicked with blood. My muscles screamed as we hung, suspended in a chain, Chloe holding onto me onto Dior, and Danton onto us all. My hands were full. There was naught I could do as, with a triumphant smile and the strength of bloody centuries, the beast hauled us back up. In a second, he'd have us. In a second, it'd be over, everything for nothing. And in that second, Chloe looked up into my eyes, burning with familiar fire.
"Dior is all that matters, Gabe."
And letting go of my hand, she plunged down into the dark.
"Chloe!"
Dior roared. No time to think, no time to mourn. Time only to reach up, broken hand and bloody fangs, taking hold of that ridiculous coat and the waistcoat and shirt underneath, and seizing a fistful, agony flaring down my shattered arm as I ripped seam and thread, silvered buttons spinning into the night as, magic or no, the coat slipped away from his arms. My weight dragged him down, Danton spitting a black curse as he staggered back, left only with a torn coat of midnight blue and silver curlicue in hand. Rushing wind in my ears, a screaming boy in my arms. And down, down into the dark, we fell.
Chapter 16. The One Thing. When I was a lad, I used to play a game with my sisters, Amelie and Selene. It was named Elements. You close your hand, count 1, 2, 3, then form your hand into a shape. Fist for wood, fingers upturned for fire, flat palm for water. Water beat fire, fire beat wood, wood beat water. Having fallen 150 feet into it is now my official position that water beats just about anything. It felt like stone as we hit it. I've been punched by Ancien of the Blood Divoc, taken silver bomb explosions to the chest, been inside a chemical still as the mad bastard who ran it blew it sky high. And I tell you now, I've never felt anything like it. If I were an ordinary man, I'd have been dead. Story finished. Song sung. But broken and bleeding as I was still pale blood. And like old Master Greyhand used to assure me, as he cut me to ribbons every night at Spa, pale bloods don't die easy. The impact was deafening, rocking my brain inside my skull, turning black to blinding white. I lost consciousness, I'm sure of it. But only for a second. The cold snapped me back into my body like a bowstring. All was freezing black, above and below. But as I opened my eyes, tumbling into the water, I saw him. Ashen hair adrift around his face, hanging limp as a boned fish. And hurting as I was, still I lunged, slipping my good arm around his waist and kicking desperately, piercing the surface with a ragged, bruised bone gasp.
"La chance!" I roared. "La chance!"
He made no reply, eyes closed, head lolling on his neck. But miraculously, somehow, he was breathing. I looked around, desperate, bellowing over the river's rush.
"Chloe!"
No sound, no sign, nothing. If I dove below to look for her, the boy in my arms would drown. And if we stayed in this water, he'd freeze along with it. And so, roaring her name one last time, eyes burning, I held Dior tight and swam north across the Volta, broken arm trailing at my side. Away from those cliffs above the slaughterhouse of Saint Guillaume, the poor wretches Danton had butchered. I'd warned them all. Chloe too, but still, I had to push it from my mind. The sight of Saoirse being ripped ear to ear, Bellamy's eyes wide open, blinded forever. And Rafa, that poor bastard, dying with Danton's mouth on his throat and the name of the god that had failed him on his lips. I swam, bloody water behind me, every muscle screaming. My only solace was a familiar weight on my hip, ash drinker, slapping my leg as I kicked toward the shoreline. I'd lost them all, but I'd get my sword at least. And as a sodden cough racked his frame and a feeble groan spilled over purpling lips, I knew I still had la chance. He groaned again, near senseless. "Hold on to me, boy." His eyelids were heavy and he clung weakly to the arm I'd wrapped around his chest. But though I could tell he was terrified of the water about him, though he knew if I were to let him go he'd sink like a stone, even with the cold he didn't tremble. Whatever else, Dior Lachance was never a coward. We reached the shallows, and I found my footing, slinging the lad over my shoulder. He was still senseless from the fall, ash-white hair hanging lank over his face. I'd ripped every scrap of clothing off him from the waist up to free him from Danton's clutches, and I knew the little bastard would freeze soon enough. So, staggering up the wooded bank, I thumped him against an old rotted tree, and wincing at my still shattered wrist, I shrugged my greatcoat off my shoulders. And then I saw it. The one thing that would change everything. Dior was coatless and shirtless, but not entirely naked. Chloe's bandage was still around his throat, but another bandage was wrapped about his chest many times over.
At first I thought the boy might have been wounded, the bandage some holdover from an older battle. But then, beneath the wrappings I saw it. Saw them. Bound uncomfortably tight, but unmistakable. Jean-Francois blinked, glancing up from his tome and snapping his fingers.
Breasts.
Oui, Gabriel nodded. Jean-Francois smiled all the way to his dark eyes and clapped as if delighted.
Dior is a girl's name as well as a boy's, Silver Saint.
Do tell, vampire. The historian laughed uproariously, slapping his knee and stomping his feet.
You never suspected? But your dear Chloe told you that falling star had marked the Grail's birth. That's why he wouldn't take off his shirt to dry it. That's why Saoirse referred to him by a feminine endearment like flower. He wasn't a 14-year-old boy. She was a 16-year-old girl. Oh, de Leon, you are priceless. How much the fool did you feel?
The Silver Saint reached for the wine, muttering. No need to rub it in, prick. Jean-Francois chuckled and returned to his tome. I stumbled back, greatcoat in hand, rocked onto my heels. I looked Dior over, eyes roaming the shoulders, the waist, the jaw. I'd thought her just a lad. Androgyne, perhaps. Pretty, oui. But the way she spat, swore, smoked, swaggered. Great redeemer. The little bitch had me fooled. And then those blue eyes fluttered open, widening as Dior realized that fancy coat and silken shirt were gone. Pale hands flashed up to cover her chest. Some feeble attempt at modesty we both knew was doomed to fail. The girl looked up into my eyes, horror, indignity, fear. Fuck, she said. My, I replied. Face, we chorused.
Chapter 17. Remembrance. Jean-Francois was still chuckling, the vampire shaking his head as he wrote in his accursed book. The cell about them was chill, silent, save for the gentle scratching upon the page. Dipping his quill again, the historian frowned, realizing his ink bottle was almost empty.
Meline, he called. My dove.
The door opened immediately. The thrall, with her long chains of auburn hair, stood at the threshold, a puppet summoned by invisible strings. She was a beautiful woman, Gabriel realized, wrapped in black corsetry and lace. The blood she'd suckled from Jean-Francois' thumb had healed her entirely now. Only the faintest scar marked the place where he'd bitten her wrist. But still, Gabriel could smell it, faint traces of rust and autumn's fading. He pictured the woman on her knees before him, coal-rimmed eyes gazing up at him as she brushed those auburn locks back from the pale promise of her neck. His blood thrummed southward at the thought, leaving him hard and aching in his leathers.
Master, she asked. More ink, my dove, Jean-Francois said, and something to drink for our guest.
Gabriel emptied his glass and nodded.
Another bottle. Wine?
Dark eyes drifted to the bulge below the Silver Saint's belt.
Or something stronger.
Gabriel's eyes flashed. Another bottle.
Jean-Francois glanced to the thrall, and Meline dropped into a smooth curtsy, feet whispering as she retreated down the stairs. Gabriel counted the number of steps again, listening to the faint song in the chateau below. Laughter, still echoes, faint screaming. The night was past its deeping now, and he could feel the distant promise of dawn on the horizon. He wondered if they'd let him sleep. He wondered if he'd dream.
The hope of the empire entire, Jean-Francois mused. The last scion of the line of Essan. The cup that held the blood of the Redeemer himself. A 16-year-old girl.
Gabriel poured the last few drops of money into his glass. Plot twist.
And Danton had no hint of this revelation either, I take it. I imagine his pursuit would have been rather more single-minded, had he known the truth of things. Despite his age, the Beast of Velen ever favored the pretty demoiselle.
Chloe knew, Gabriel shrugged. Saoirse too.
But Sir Sauvage kept the girl's secret buried deep enough that Danton didn't pluck it from her thoughts the night he chose to visit them. He never bothered to rummage around in Circe's head, and Dior's mind was always a closed room to the dead.
And so Danton toyed with you instead, Jean-Francois tutted, allowing your little famille vendetta to distract him from simply plucking his prize and instead watching it slip, literally and metaphorically, through his bloody fingers.
I wouldn't describe the vendetta between me and the Vos as little, Chaston. The blood feud between me and Fabian's brood had been brewing half my life.
And so?
Jean-Francois steepled slender fingers at ruby lips, watching the man opposite with hunter's eyes.
We return. Back to the beginning. And Saint-Michon.
Gabriel sighed, looking at the empty glass in his hand, wondering if he were numb enough, cold enough. He could feel them both, the endings to the tales he'd begun, like old scars on tattooed skin. He wondered which would tear wider, bleed harder, and for a brief, moon-touched moment, he considered the glass in his hand, the blade he might fashion of it, not enough for a vampire's skin, surely, but enough for his own. Not across the stream, but up the river. The shard digging deep, letting that accursed blood flow. But such thoughts were folly, and he knew it. Knew it from bitter experience and long, lonely nights, watching the wounds close over before his tear-strung eyes, the curse in his veins not allowing him to die, to sleep. To sleep and never dream. Melinée returned, footsteps soft on the stairs. She stepped through the door she'd left unlocked, golden tray poised on one manicured hand. The damask of her skirts rustled like falling leaves as she swept into the room, and Gabriel could feel the warmth of her body, hear the music of her pulse as she placed a fresh bottle of Monet upon the table between him and the historian. She sank to her knees then, head bowed, hands upturned like a priestess before the marbled statue of a god of old. And Jean-Francois plucked the fresh bottle of ink from her open palms.
Merci, my dove. Do you desire anything else, master?
The vampire reached out, running one long, sharp fingernail ever so gently down the woman's cheek. Her breath caught in her breast as he hooked his claw beneath her chin, lifting her face so she could meet his eyes.
Oh, my darling, he whispered. Always.
Her lips parted. A trembling sigh slipped from her mouth. But the vampire withdrew his hand the way God withdraws a blessing.
Leave us now. I am your servant, master.
The thrall rose on shaking legs, curtsied and retreated from the room. The pair were left alone again, killer and monster, an ocean unsaid between them. The vampire watched Gabriel refill his glass, the wine dark as blood yet holding none of its promise, brought brimming to the edge. Leathered wings cut through the night skies beyond the window. The twin moons hung in the heavens, dipped crimson.
We must return there eventually, de Lyon, Jean-Francois said. Back to the seven pillars and the scarlet foundry and the walls of the gauntlet. To wise Master Greyhand and cruel Seraf Talon. To treacherous young Aaron d'Acoste and your final hunt together. You had been sent out onto the frozen roads of the Nordland, Silver Saint. A Vos of ancient blood had been behind the malady in Skyfall. An Ironheart of immeasurable power was already east of the Godsend Mountains, when the Forever King himself was still massing his endless legion in Talost. There is a secret buried within your vault here, de Lyon. A secret soaked in darkest blood and whispered with holy tongues. And I would like to unearth it before you are too befuddled with wine to remember. But that's the problem, vampire. Hard as I try, much as I wish.
Gabriel looked to the bleak night outside, hands curling to fists, ears ringing with the song of silver trumpets, tongue tingling with a taste of fruit forbidden.
I remember everything.
Book 5. The Road to Hell. And the hands grew red as heart's blood, and the tempest cracked the sky, and the rain was like to the tears of all the winged host fallen.
those priests of gods false and covenants broken, numbering all the fingers upon hell's burning hand, did stand in bleak amazement. And the Redeemer raised his eyes to his almighty Father's throne, and his heart did stain the bones of the earth, and with voice akin to thunder he cried, "By this blood shall they have life eternal." The Book of Laments, 7:12. Chapter 1. Truth Beyond Truth. Your sister's name is Selene, but that is not what you call her. Seraph Talon sat across the fire from me, dark eyes on mine. The cave about us was small, warm. The blaze reflected in Master Greyhand's stare as he looked on. My brow was knitted as I met Talon's gaze, my head filled with as much noise as I could conjure. "Black hair," the thin man declared, stroking his moustache. "Black eyes, a troublemaker, an instigator. Hence you call her Helion." "Shit," I whispered. I broke our staring contest, sighing as I massaged my temples. My head was aching, my heart low. Despite my best efforts, the Seraph had once again plucked the images and truths out of my head after only a minute or so. "You're improving, my spud-witted little shit-bucket," Talon declared, "but not enough. If I can still pierce your defences, an Eldavos will shatter them in a bloody blinking. Work at it." "I have been working at it, Seraph, every day since we left Saint-Michon." "Day and night, then," Greyhand growled. "When we find our prey, you must be ready." I kept my face stone, but inside I scoffed. "When we found our prey?" "Great Redeemer, we've been on this hunt for months. Seraph Talon, Aaron, Greyhand and me. A stranger company I'd never known. After setting out from Saint-Michon, we'd headed northwest to the Godsend Mountains, following a month-old trail through a vista of chill black peaks and dying trees. Winter hadn't truly bitten when we set out, but now the snows fell heavy, the roads lonely and bleak. As we travelled, Frere Greyhand had used gifts of the Blood Chastain to track our quarry, murmuring to wise old owls and conferring with sly foxes as we bedded down. Many of the beasts had no clue about our prey. Others whispered of different monsters, dark shapes rising in the southern weald and Faken stalking the moors with knives of gleaming bone. Still, a precious few had spoken of a woman, dark thing, dead thing, riding lonely roads in the company of other shadows, heading north, always north, and like good hounds we'd followed. We'd visited the bustling town of Armwood and found a tale akin to Skyfall, the daughter of the alderman murdered, a bevy of highborn gentry fallen to a wasting sickness. The nest we'd burned out was small, a single fledgling who knew nothing of what it was. In the crossroad hamlets of Benom and the silver mining town of Tolbrook, we heard similar tales. And slowly we'd begun to paint a portrait of the thing we stalked. This pale huntress who filled children's graves wherever she walked. This Marianne Lungwa, Raven Child. She was beautiful, all mentioned that, and ever first. A grace so perilous that men and women alike couldn't help but adore her. She hunted among high society, all flattery and silken finery, striking like a spider at their sons and daughters as she departed. A half dozen kept her company. The first, another cold blood who masqueraded as her son, a dark-haired, gilded youth named Adrian. Five other men attended the pair as servants. In Tolbrook, Lungqua had informed the alderman she was surveying a claim in the hills above the town, just as she'd done in Skyfall. In the high-walled keep of Seerfort, the charming madame and her handsome son had been treated to a tour of the garrison by an enraptured capitaine, whose daughter was later found murdered in her bed. We had no real certainty as to why this vampire was stalking towns along the Godsend, but she was doing so with intent. And we were always a few steps behind. The rivers were crusted with ice now, winter's deep approaching on cold feet. We were camped beneath a snow-capped peak named for Eloise, the Angel of Retribution. A little farther north loomed the mountain named for Raphael, Angel of Wisdom. And in the valley between lay the next stop in our months-long search, the richest silver mining town in the province, and, as fate would have it, a high seat of Aaron's stepfather, the Barony of Kost. We were on bitter terms, Aaron and me. I was still sure the bastard had tried to have me killed back in Saint Michon, and got poor sister Aoife murdered in the process. I was ill at ease with the idea that we were journeying to his former home, that I'd be laying my head down among his people. For his part, Aaron treated me as shitty as he always had, watching me across the fire at night with silent menace. But as we travelled closer to his birthplace, I'd expected our lordling's mood to brighten at least a little. He'd always spoken of his mother fondly, and I thought he'd be joyous at the thought of reunion. And yet, the nearer we drew to Kost, the darker his mood became. That night before we arrived, we were camped in a cave on Raphael's eastern flank. Our associates were clustered at the entrance, snow clinging to their shaggy coats. Talon had been schooling Aaron and me in matters of mental defense along the road, and while I didn't like the seraph in my head, I knew vampires with the blood vase could read the thoughts of lesser men. Better Talon, in my mind, strengthening it, than one of them pillaging it. Our lesson done for the night, the seraph held his hands to our fire. Great Redeemer, it grows cold enough to freeze the blood in a man's veins. I rubbed my aching brow, glanced northward. And the rivers in their beds. Aaron met my eyes, nodding also. We may have been at odds, like fire and ice, but in one dread, we were of accord. The Forever King will march from Talhost soon. Probably, Greyhand grunted, yet not a certainty. Patience is a quality that ancient vampires have in abundance. Fabian Voss will march when he is ready. We should be doing more, Aaron scowled, not just chasing ghosts and shadows. An Elder Voss is not east of the Godsend at trivial purpose to Kost, Talon growled. In thwarting Lunqua, we thought whatever part she plays in Fabian's design. We settled into silence, staring at the flames. I understood we needed to be as patient as our quarry, but like to Kost, I felt we'd been stalking Marianne Lunqua forever. The threat of the Forever King's legion hung over the Nordland like a headsman's axe now. The Emperor's armies were split between the city forts of Avingborg in the north and Scharinfell in the south, and we still didn't know where the blow would fall. Blessed Mother Maid, I growled. It's cold as a bog hag's tit in here. Seraph Talon's eyes glittered under the black arcs of his brows. Smoothing his long moustache, the little man rummaged in his saddlebag, produced a silver flask. Taking a deep swig, he offered it to me. I could smell the vodka from where I sat. Mercy, no, Seraph. Come now, frail blood. The little man waved the flask in my face. Kindness spurned is ire earned, so saith the Lord. And the testament's named Drink Nor Sin. It's not the sin of it, Seraph. I've just no wish to follow in my stepfather's footsteps. He was a devil on the drink. Aaron reached for the flask in Talon's hand. Mine also. I blinked at that, studying DeCost across the flames as he took a long, slow pull. Our lordling had only ever spoken of his mother, never the fellow who raised him. My stepfather was a soldier, Greyhand declared. Loved a drink. I remember he got right slovenly one eve, lost his key. So, when he finally dribbled home, he dragged himself through the window, crawled into bed with what he thought was my mama. It turned out to be the magistrate's house, and the dame in question, his wife. Chuckles rolled around our fire. Even Greyhand managed a whisper of a smile. The magistrate was not pleased. But what about his wife, Master? I asked. Greyhand fixed me across the fire, deadpan. You'd have to ask her, cub. I laughed again, spitting onto my whetstone as I sharpened Lion Claw. When I was little, Mama got so fed up with my stepfather's drinking she hid his clothes so he couldn't hit the tavern. He He put on her church dress and went anyway. Just marched down the street in her Priadi best, proud as a lord. I remember it was white, had blue flowers on it.
Sounds fetching, Greyhound nodded.
He did have fine ankles, I admitted grudgingly.
Seraph Talon took another long swig, then handed his flask back to Aaron.
Do you remember that haunt down in Beaufort, Greyhound? With old Yannick? How could I forget?
My ears perked up at that.
I'd known Frère Yannick only as a broken man,
put out of his misery in the Red Rite that first night I'd arrived in Saint-Michel. But I always loved hearing the stories of old Silver Saints. Tales of horror and glory and blood.
You two hunted together? I asked, looking between the men.
I was not always a seraph of the order, shiplord, Talon growled. I earned my aegis when you were still a tadpole, paddling about in your godless father's jungle sack. It was many years ago, little lion, Greyhound said. I was only newly sworn. A dusk dancer had been stalking the Beaufort docks for months. Old Abbot Dulian sent the three of us down there to put a righteous end to it.
Talon nodded.
The more a dusk dancer takes the shape of his beast, the more the beast leaves its mark on him. This bastard was an old one, wolf-born and hideous. Even when he wore the skin of a man, he had a wolf's eyes, wolf's tail, wolf's feet. So we developed a taste for streetwalkers, luring them into the shadows with a promise of coin, and then gutting them like lambs. We decided to use bait to lure him out. So we drew straws, and old Yannick found himself in a wig and backless dress, smothered in horse perfume and parading up and down the fucking jetty like Har Royal strumpet.
Greyhound shook his head.
Finest legs I've ever seen on a man. They work, too. Not even that bastard dusk dancer could resist. Mark me now, frail blood. A good hunter uses the appetites of his prey against them. Want is a weakness.
Greyhound sighed as he stared into the fire.
I miss that mouthy old dog. It was Yannick who named me Greyhound. He was a good hunter, Talon nodded, and a good friend.
We?
My master shook his head, and I saw sorrow in his pale green eyes. But Yannick made the right choice. I pray Almighty God and all seven martyrs grant me the same courage when the thirst calls and my time comes.
I could still remember the horror I'd felt at old Yannick's ending, ritually murdered by the abbot and thrown to the waters of the mare before the Sangira. The red thirst could consume him. It was a silver saint's death, a man's death. But looking at the seven star in my palm, I found myself pondering that same pale blood curse in my veins. No matter how much Sanctus we smoked to stave it off, I knew the Sangira would eventually drive all of us to madness. And before that, each of us would have to make Yannick's choice. Better to die a man than live a monster, I murmured.
Talon nodded, grim.
Varys. Varys, Greyhound said, stirring the fire.
Truth beyond truth. We sat with the sound of crackling logs, Greyhound and Talon now staring wordless into the flames. The silence stretched on, Aaron drinking deep from the flask, mute and sullen. I finally spoke again to break the uncomfortable quiet.
Why did old Yannick name you Greyhound, Master?
A tale not worth the telling, little lion.
You know the stonemasons in Saint-Michel have a wager. Whoever learns your real name wins a whole week's coin without labour.
Gambling is ungodly. At last I heard it was only 3 days' worth.
It seems your legend grows in the telling, I smiled.
Legends always do, little lion, and ever in the wrong direction. But a man who sings his own song is deaf to the music of heaven. How shall I hear the word of God if I am in love with the sound of my own voice?
I could feel Greyhound's quiet confidence, his unshakable faith. He'd no need for mortal accolade or to strum his own lute. His service to the Almighty was enough, and sweet fucking Redeemer, I envied him that humility. But Talon spoke, eyes on our master.
I'll tell the story then. Yannick shared it with me one eve over a cup of wine.
Ah, such impeccable sources, Graham scoffed. Drunken gossip around the tankards of Saint-Michel. But Talon spoke regardless, his voice dropping as he leaned into the tale. This was back when Greyhound was still an apprentice, see? Tale has it, he and his master were attacked by 5 Coldbloods deep in an old ruin near Loch Shee. His master, Michel, was slain in the ambush and Greyhound retreated. But at dawn, he returned alone, nothing but his sword and faith to guard him. And when he emerged from that pit, the ashes of those 5 leeches were caked so thick on his fists, you couldn't see his skin. So, Talon nodded to our master. Greyhound. He scowled. I note a marked lack of denials, master, I said. What point denial, when the gossips have already made up their minds? When next you tell the tale, Seraph, have me slay a dozen. Makes the number rounder.
"'Tis a heavy burden, master,' I smiled. "'To be a hero?'
"'Hero,' he scoffed. "'Mark my words, young blood. "'You don't want to be a hero. "'Heroes die unpleasant deaths, far from home and hearth.' "'I looked into the flames, thinking about what I was, "'the fates that had befallen old Yannick, "'and the madness that awaited us all. "'Greyhound spat into the fire, flames hissing. "'Enough idle chatter.' We reach Cost Amora. What should your fellows know of the town that birthed you, Initiate? All eyes turned to Aaron as he took another sip, grimacing as he swallowed. Again, the notion that I was stepping into this bastard's birthday and felt like a stone in my belly. Cost is the richest town in the province, Aaron said. Its fortune made in silver and iron. The Baron is favored at court, friend to Emperor Alexandra. My brother, Jean-Luc, is capitaine in the Golden Host at Avonbourg. My mother, his Imperial Majesty's second cousin. And then, there's me. We've gained ground on our quarry this last month, Greyhound said. It may be our raven child awaits us within the walls of Costa. And the feast of Saint Maximilien falls in 2 days. No doubt the town will be indulging, Baron sneered. The Baron de Cost is never one to miss a chance to feast. Be of good cheer, then. Our quarry is a bon vivant, lured to all the finer things like a bower bird to shine. If she lurks in Cost's shadows, she should have occasion to be drawn into the light. So sleep now. Fear no darkness. Greyhound threw a warning glance to me. And dream not of heroism, but of faithful service to the Lord your God. We settled to bed. I listened to the crackling fire and tried not to think about the cold, the serpent sleeping across the flames from me. I knew not what awaited us in Cost, nor whether Aaron would try to finish what he'd started in Saint-Michel. But I could sense our prey was near. I'd let impatience get the best of me during our hunt in Skyfall, and I was determined not to fail again. But despite Greyhound's warning, still I dreamed of glory. Glory and a smile framed by a beauty spot, and locks of raven black hair.
Chapter 2 Unwelcome Guests. We arrived in Cost the next day, just as the sun was sinking to sleep. The city was a grander affair, even than Skyfall. A beautiful sprawl of dark stone and pale roofs carved at the banks of a magnificent waterfall. Winter hadn't yet turned the falls to ice, but they were almost there. Huge sculptures of frozen water, hanging over the drop, glittering like diamond. The great city was split in 2, 3 bridges crossing the freezing river. A princely keep sat on a ridge above it all, flying flags of a quartered green field, graced with 2 crossed warhammers, the crest of the Famille de Cost. As we rode through the mighty gates, the whole city was ringing with song, despite the chill. Jean-Francois wordlessly tapped his quill, raising one brow. Gabriel sighed. The feast of Maximilien the Martyr is the grandest piss-up in the Eladani calendar. Less solemn than First Mass or Wheels Day, the feast of the Redeemer's birth and death, it's one of the most important festivals of the year. Maximilien d'Augustin was a warlord who, depending on who you believe,
either received his commands direct from the mouth of Almighty God, or was just goat-fuckingly insane. Either way, he raised an army and seized control of Elidane, Nordland, and Oswey in the name of the One Faith. He was killed in battle by an arrow to the eye, which you'd think would be the sort of thing Almighty God would warn his chosen one about. But his sons went on to conquer the Sudeim and Talhost, finally uniting the warring kingdoms into a single empire under the banner of the Wheel. They forged the fivefold throne, carved out the Augustan dynasty, and named dear old Papa the seventh martyr. Folk have been getting bowel-bustingly shit-faced on the anniversary of his death ever since. Aaron pulled his tricorn low as we rode beyond the walls, collar laced high so none could see his face. Some folk were suspicious at the sight of us, making the sign of the Wheel as we passed. Others stared with want in their eyes, sensing the beast beneath our skins. But most were into their cups and paid little mind. Kost was the biggest city I'd seen in my life. 30,000 people called it home, and most were in the streets that night. If a vampire hid among this multitude, it'd take the finest hounds to sniff her out. But I fancied us that and more. Riding through those gates, I was struck by how strange a turn my life had taken. 9 months back, I'd been sleepwalking, a blacksmith's boy with no clue of the future rushing at him headlong. And now, here it was, swathed in black and etched in silver. I confess I'd never felt so alive. A young lion at hunt, nose to the wind. And though I caught no hint of our quarry yet, if nothing else, I was awake. We took the winding roads up the hill, past overfull taverns and rollicking bawdy houses. Aaron nodded to the keep above. My stepfather throws a feast for his lords every year on this eve. Those halls shall be crowded with Kost's finest tonight. So you're planning to wait outside then? I growled. Stay up all night writing that one, did you, peasant? I flipped in the father's, and Kost slapped his neck as if swatting a bug. I was fully aware it was foolish to be spitting at each other at a time like this. But I also knew I might find myself alone with Aaron watching my back tonight, and after the attack he'd orchestrated on me in the stables, I'd no trust he wouldn't put a knife in it. Stop your squabbling, Greyhand growled. We are at hunt tonight. I waved at my greatcoat and sword. If intent is to lie in wait among the sheep until the wolf shows teeth, it seems unwise to dress as shepherds. Talon nodded. We do stick out like four leather-clad thumbs. I'm certain suitable attire can be acquired from the master of the house. Aaron rubbed his jaw and sighed. So, I suppose we'd best go speak to him. Our horses' shoes rang on the cobbles as we climbed the road upward, and the light had well failed before we reached the keep. The portcullis was raised in welcome, the drawbridge lowered. Torches burned on the walls, lighting chill mists in the bailey. I could see men-at-arms, well arrayed in steel finery and tabards of the house. The flag of the Famille de Kost flew proud on the walls, spit and shine on every surface. An officer of the gendarme came out to greet us, clad in heavy mail. Before de Kost had even pulled down his collar, I saw recognition in the man's eyes. Master Aaron. Well met, Capitaine Daniel. How is your son? Passing fair, my lord. Merci. The man looked among us, and I could tell from his mix of fear and soft loathing that he knew exactly what we were. What brings you home after so many months, Master Aaron, and in such company? I have need to speak to my mother. She is preparing for the feast, my lord. I fear she cannot. I fear manners have slipped in my absence, Capitaine. The blonde lordling sat taller, that familiar mix of arrogance and confidence oozing from his pores. Unless it has become habit in Chateau de Kost for the manor-born to be questioned by the help. Forgive me, my lord, but your father left word if ever you were to... The man's voice failed as Aaron leaned closer, a predator's gleam in his eyes. Send word to my mother. I wish to see her, Capitaine. The man's face slackened,
his eyes dulled.
At once, my lord.
See our horses stabled. If you've men sitting idle, set them to the watch. Mortal peril comes to your master's house this night, Danio, and it wears no silver on its breast.
I watched Aaron slipping into the role of the noble son as easy as putting on an old coat, reminded of all the things I disliked about him. He spat orders to those men like he was their better, and I'd no doubt he believed it, of them and me. This prick was a snake. No matter if we were on the hunt, I was damned if I'd give him chance to bite me again. 10 minutes later, we stood in the grand entrance hall of Kost Keep, surrounded by fine tapestries and marble statues. A broad staircase led upward, and to our left I could see a beautiful ballroom, bedecked in finery and buzzing with servants. Long tables were being laid with pale linen, and beyond, a quartet of soothsingers practiced above a dance floor, inlaid with bloodwood and gleaming mother-of-pearl. If the wealth of Skyfall had left me queasy, the opulence here was sickening. I couldn't imagine what it must have been to grow up in a place like this. No wonder DeCoste acted as if the mother maid sucked his cock dry before morn meal every day.
My son.
Aaron looked up, and I saw all tension melt from his frame. A stately woman stood on the landing, clad in a beautiful emerald gown, a spectacular powdered wig propped atop her head. She was perhaps 40, powdered pale, her eyes the same bright blue as Aaron's.
Mama,
he whispered.
Aaron,
she cried, sweeping down and into his arms. Tears shone in her lashes as she held him tight, twirling him on the spot as if they danced.
When did you arrive?
Just now.
You remember Master Greyhand?
These are my comrades, Mama, Seraph Talon de Montfort and Gabriel de Leon.
The Baron graced us all with a perfect curtsy.
Any comrades of my dearest are welcome within these halls. But praise San Maximilien and the Mother Maid, I thought not to see you again so soon, my son. What have I done to deserve such a blessing?
What indeed? Came a low, rasping voice. I turned to the stairwell above and saw a man watching the reunion with narrowed eyes. The Baron de Coste was arrayed in a green frock coat of finest cut, silken hose and shirt. He radiated cold authority and dripped wealth from every gold-trimmed finger. But no amount of leaden paint could mask the burst capillaries scrawled on his cheeks or the strawberry plumpness of his nose. Growing up around a drunkard makes a lad an expert at spotting others, and I marked the Baron for a lush as soon as I laid eyes on him. He wasn't the kind who'd grown bloated with it, rolling to his cups like a whale through the surf. No, Aaron's stepfather was the breed whose disease eats him from the inside out. The Baron de Coste was a well-dressed skeleton, glowering at Aaron with undisguised contempt.
How comes it you visit on this of all nights, bastard?
He looked over our number with a soft sneer.
And what in the name of Almighty God possessed you to bring a bevy of half-breed swine to my door?
Baron de Coste, Greyhand bowed. Well met again, Signor. I apologize for...
I have as little use for your apology as I have for your company, half-breed, the Baron said. You were welcome in my halls when last you visited, only because you took this mongrel off my hands. Am I to understand you are returning him?
We are here at our abbot's behest, Baron,
Talon bowed.
We have reason to believe you may have an unwelcome guest at your feast this evening.
Several, it seems.
A vampire, Aaron said. One we've stalked for months now.
I saw DeCoste's mother tense at that. But the Baron himself seemed unimpressed.
Well, it cannot be the one that despoiled your mama, bastard. Your rapist father was sent to his well-deserved hell years ago. The same that awaits you, I expect.
A woman,
Aaron replied, undaunted.
An ancien, steeped in murder, who has stalked the edge of the godsend for moons now. Your guests may be in danger.
He looked to his mama.
You may be in danger.
DeCoste turned his eyes back to the Baron. His jaw was clenched in defiance, and he stood taller, striking the pose of the proud young lord.
But though I was again reminded of all the things I hated about him, I could see the little shit's pose for what it was now. A facade to hide the fear within. A fear I could sense in him, sure as breathing. Despite all he was, Arundhikos was afraid of his stepfather, afraid and utterly hateful. The Baron looked us over with paper-cut eyes. His lip curled.
Well then, I suppose you'd best come in.
Chapter 3. Trouble of a Different Flavor. The great keep of the Baron de Coste was filled to the brim, his peacocks and hens all on parade. Knights in green tabards and lordly finery, feathered caps and velvet crushed. Dames and demoiselles with lead pale faces, and cheeks rouged with blood, swathed in yards of old damask and chiffon and crepe. And then there was us. The Baron had graciously loaned a change of wardrobe, but he'd outfitted Greyhand, Talon and me as servants, rather than guests. I wore a simple black doublet and tight pale hose, my hair tied in a long plait. The only weapons I could conceal beneath were my silver steel dagger and two silver bombs. Greyhand was posing as a footman, watching guests as they arrived at the Baron's door. An archer soared the skies above, the falcon ever assisting his master. Seraph Talon was dressed as one of the house gendarmes, patrolling within the keep should Lungwa seek entrance in secret. Baron was arrived as gentry, of course, arm in arm with his mother. And I was right there in the ballroom with him, serving fucking drinks. I watched the pair as they swept around the room, my eyes lingering on the Baron de Coste. She clearly doted on her son, despite Aaron's being the offspring of her violation. Watching her, I thought of my own mama, and of my father. Who was she to him? Lover or victim? And in the end, what did that make me? The smoke of Revra and white poppy hung in the air, entwined with the perfume of gilded ladies. Minstrel song mingled with the tune of gold-dipped fingers on crystal, of cruel laughter and cutting jabs. Wine was as rare as spun gold so long after Day's death, and yet it flowed like water. I felt I swam in a bloody river, surrounded by hungry reptiles. But of Marianne Lunqua, there was no sign. Terribly tedious, don't you think? I blinked at the smoky voice, turned to find a pretty demoiselle regarding me with bored expression. She wore green silk, her corset pulling her curves into a perfect hourglass. Her long hair was the gold of autumn leaves, her eyes blue as old skies. What's tedious, mademoiselle?
All this,
the girl waved about us. The same old people having the same old conversations. It's just the same as it was last year, and the year before. She watched me through long dark lashes.
Except for you, of course.
I proffered my tray. May I offer you a drink, mademoiselle? The girl took a glass but raised one brow.
Come now. You're no more a servant than I. You arrived with Aaron and those others earlier today. The sour-faced man and the thin one with the oily moustache. Who are you?
I was wondering the same of her, but turned my eyes to the floorboards as a good servant might.
Nobody of consequence, mademoiselle.
She sniffed.
I'll be the judge of that.
With one more glance for me, the young lady turned on polished heels and drifted into the throng. I shook my head, eyes returning to the crowd. Baron de Coste's ballroom was full of folk like that, all of the cut and colour I'd expected, the blushing ingenue, the handsome rake, the drunken lord and the smiling snake. My hand drifted to an inner pocket of my doublet, right over my heart, to the Saint's Day gift folded there. The portrait Astrid had drawn me. I was surrounded by beauties in old velvet and satin, corsets of whalebone and necklets of gold. And the only girl I found myself thinking of wore simple novice white.
I missed her.
The feast was done. The revels begun, couples sweeping about the dance floor to beautiful song. The Baron de Coste sat among his lords, barks of laughter cutting the air like rusty knives. Hours had passed, and still not a hint of our quarry. But now, looking across the room, I realized I might have trouble of a different flavor.
Ron de Coste stood among a bouquet of high-born dames, holding court. Aaron had found his way free of his mother's side, and was now sitting at a round table, surrounded by beautiful young women. They flocked to him, silken and smiling, spellbound by the return of the handsome golden-haired lordling. But looking at the flush in his cheeks as he downed another goblet, there was no doubt about it. De Coste was getting shit-faced. I couldn't fucking believe it. Here and now.
Spitting a soft curse, I walked across the dance floor to hover beside his table, silent and glowering.
Ah, splendid.
One of the demoiselles raided my tray, taking all the remaining drinks and nodding toward the kitchens.
Fetch more, garçon, and be swift about it.
De Coste looked up at me and smiled.
You heard, Mademoiselle Monique, peasant.
I'd half a mind to drag the spoiled shit someplace private and kick some sense into him. But for all the apparent futility of it, we were still at hunt. And so instead of making a scene, I gave the silken gathering my best courtly bow, which isn't all that courtly, mind, and my best crooked smile, which I'm assured is crooked as an Ossian tax collector.
Pardon, mademoiselles, but I have a message for Lord de Coste from the Baron.
The ladies looked at Aaron in question, and after a dramatic roll of his baby blues, the lordling begged leave and sent them away. I waited till the flock was out of earshot, then sat beside him, a polite smile painted on my face as I spat like I'd a mouthful of piss.
Have you taken leave of your fucking senses?
Aaron gulped another mouthful.
What troubles, frail blood?
We're at hunt, and you're so sodden you can barely stand.
The hour grows late, and still no sign of Lunqua. Methinks the viper smelled the hounds on her tail.
So we? I'm having a fucking drink. Aaron's eyes roamed the revelers about us, then sidelong to me.
You look ridiculous in those stockings, by the way.
Sweet of you to notice, shit heel. His sneer widened.
If it's of comfort, my cousin noticed too.
I followed Aaron's eyeline, noting a clutch of pretty young femmes watching me over their fluttering fans. Among them I saw that autumn-haired girl again, gazing at me with careful blue eyes. Looking about the room, I saw others staring at us too, the predator in our blood ever drawing attentions towards us. These folk knew not what we were, but something in their hearts told us we were not their kind.
Veronique has been gawping at your shapely calves all evening.
Aaron raised his goblet, and the autumn-haired girl raised hers in kind, smiling sweet.
Expect a proposition when her father gets too drunk to notice.
I adore the little bitch. Famille is famille.
But her sort do so enjoy tumbling with the help.
Her sort.
Poor little rich girl.
Aaron sighed and glanced about.
All of them. Such cliches.
I gritted my teeth as de Coste finished his wine, eyes on his stepfather. The Baron de Coste was regaling his lords with a bawdy tale, and the noblemen roared with laughter on cue, like trained pups. Aaron shook his head in disgust.
Especially him.
I've no wish to cause alarm, I nodded to de Coste's empty goblet. But from my vantage, you and your stepfather strike an awfully similar pose.
Careful, frail blood.
Aaron glanced at me, his voice dark with malice. You've no idea what it was to grow up under that bastard's roof.
Silk sheets. Servants hand and foot. I'm sure it was pure torture.
Know me so well, do you? I know you exact, de Coste. You spit at these folk behind their backs, and yet you're worst of the lot. The noble-born bratling above everyone and everything. The only folk you treat worse than the ones around you are the ones beneath you.
Would it shock you to learn, then, that my first love was a commoner like you?
Talk about fucking clichés, I scoffed.
just because you decided to slum it with... Watch your mouth, Aaron slurred, slamming his fist down. A few of the gentry turned to stare as the glassware on the table jumped. Aaron gave them a princely smile and raised his glass until they turned back to their own business.
I loved Sasha, he hissed, as the ocean loves the sky.
His gaze returned to the Baron, glittering with rage. And one night my noble stepfather caught us together when he was in his cups, and in his rage at finding me trysting with some low-born trollop, he took up his tankard and beat me almost to death. But there was no almost for Sasha. I looked at the Baron aghast.
He killed her.
I might have died too, if not for the blood in my veins. That was the night Mama told me what I was. So don't you dare compare me to that bastard de Leon. Ever. I stared at Aaron. This jealous highborn prick I so despised. I thought we'd nothing in common save the pale blood curse. And yet it seemed, in one more way, that Aaron and I were of accord. We both hated the men who'd raised us. Still, I could find little compassion for him. This prick had gotten Sister Aoife murdered for his jealousies. Instead of sympathy, I felt only fury at his hypocrisy. Be that as it may, Decoste, if Greyhand comes in here and sees you getting rat-arsed, he'll knock you out of your fucking shoes. So concerned for my well-being, Aaron reached for another goblet. I'm touched. I snatched the wine away. I give no fucks for your well-being, you stuck-up prick. But we're at hunt here. Your clumsiness could spell the death of me.
Oh, no. Wouldn't that be just terrible?
You'd like that, eh? If our prey saved you the trouble. I know your mind, bastard. Aaron rolled his eyes.
God, what are you bleating about now?
I hissed, the accusation slipping loose before I could stop it.
I saw you.
Saw me what? Again, I knew it was foolish to unearth his trouble now, but I was furious. And if this cur had it in for me, I wanted to know it for certain, for him to know I knew. The night I was attacked in the stables by Lacour and those wretched, I spat. The night Aoife was murdered. I saw you sneaking out of the armory like a fucking thief. The same armory that Lacour escaped from moments later.
Coincidence?
I saw my words strike home, a sliver of perfect rage piercing Aaron's eyes. For a moment, I honestly thought he might reach out for the silver steel knife in his doublet. I could see it on his face then, sure as God was my witness. This bastard wanted to murder me. But then, we felt her.
Chapter 4 Ravenchild. It crept on me like sleep at the end of a quiet day, a chill prickling the back of my neck. Aaron felt it too, looking toward that passel of demoiselles. And among them a figure stood now where none had before, as if conjured from the shadows themselves. She was silent. She was dead leaves fallen. She was a blood-red stain spilling slow across the dance floor and making my heart fall still. The drip of hot wax upon your naked skin. The first flicker of a lover's tongue into your open, wanting mouth. She wore crimson. A long and sweeping gown of lace and corsetry, like a bride all dipped in blood. Her skin wasn't just painted pale like the women about her, but white and smooth as finest alabaster. Her hair was the red of burning flame, flowing over her bare shoulders and past her slender waist. And she looked about the dancers on the edge of the ballroom's flickering light, and her eyes were black as the pits of hell. Almighty God, I breathed. I'd seen high bloods before, oui, but never the like of her. She drifted among the revelers, bewitching those she turned her attentions upon, passing through others like smoke. Nobody had announced her arrival, and I was struck with the notion that perhaps she'd always been there, waiting, watching. It was impossible to look away from her, but dread filled my belly even as I stared. This thing looked at the folk about her with a dispassion and cruelty that only the understanding of forever can bring. When she saw us, she didn't see people.
she saw food. And I beheld a pale maiden, came a murmur behind us. Her eyes were black as midnight, and her skin as cold as winter, and in her arms she bore the nightmares of every sleeping babe, every shivering child, come ripe and fulsome unto the waking world. And her name was Death, Aaron whispered. I glanced the grey hand in the shadows behind us. His pale green eyes were fixed on the newcomer, flooded red by the pipe of Sanctus he'd apparently already smoked. The Book of Laments hardly does her justice, does it? Nor the tales we'd heard on the road. I glanced back to the vampire, my mouth dry as ash. Great Redeemer, I've never seen the like. Ancien, Greyhan nodded. No quarry under heaven more dangerous. Silently we watched the monster seeping through the crowd, and all the world about her seemed colourless. A pretty fop dropped into a bough before her, a fly inviting a spider to dance. The vampire laughed, allowed the gent to sweep her out onto the floor, utterly oblivious to the peril he was in. Not just his flesh, but his very soul. Aaron and I rose to our feet as Talon joined us. The Seraph's cheeks were flushed as he watched the vampire dance, his eyes also blood red. Almighty God, what a monster. Forcing confrontation here. Aaron gazed around the ballroom, looking first to his pretty cousin, then to his fair mama. We put every person in this room in danger. They are already in danger, I replied, eyes still on a quarry. DaCoste is right, Talon said, breathing quick. Now I lay eyes upon her. We can provoke no fray here. To dance with such a devil in a crowded hall invites massacre. What plan, then, Seraph? Greyhand asked. Our Marianne is here to hunt, Talon replied, blood-red eyes still on the vampire. We wait, we watch, and when the spider chooses a victim, we follow her back to wherever she spins her web and fall like hammers of God when the sun rises. I frowned at that. We just let her take one of the guests. Is that not a sin? Greyhand glanced around us, uneasy. De Leon raises a point, Seraph. A good hunter uses the appetites of his prey against them. Want is a weakness. Look at her, Greyhand. This monster is too dangerous to confront in the dark. She'll be less dangerous if we drive her to bed hungry, surely? I asked. Showing our hand here puts everyone at risk, shipblood. Talon spat. We must not miss when we strike this blow. Losing one sheep tonight will spare the lives of thousands later. Almighty God will forgive us our trespass. I glanced to Greyhand and saw the notion sat just as ill with my master as it did with me. But Talon was a seraph in the Ordo's hierarchy, and Greyhand only a Freyr.
Master,
the seraph has spoken. You will do as commanded, initiate. I could taste iron in my mouth, cold dread pooling in my belly. But I disobeyed Greyhand on the hunt once already, in Skyfall. I dared not do it again.
We, master.
Do you think she's marked us? Aaron asked. Not yet, Greyhand murmured. But standing here like flies around a corpse only invites it. DaCoste, head outside where the footmen gather. The cold blood arrived in a hand carriage, hauled by one of her thralls, an Ossian fellow with a dark beard. Turn on those Elon charms of yours and see if you can glean the location of their abode. Press soft. If they know we've sniffed them out, they'll not return home. Aaron nodded, his tongue still slightly slurred.
Gentle as lambs, master. De Leon, watch near the entrance. The Seraph and I shall mark the flanks.
Talon grabbed my arm as I moved away.
Remember, mongrel, this thing is an elder Ironheart. If she even looks your way, mind the lessons I taught you. Think of toil, of tired feet and a domestic's drudgery. Build a wall of it and hide your secrets within.
By the blood, Seraph. I slipped off through the crowd,
carrying my empty tray. In truth, I felt sick to my heart. I knew this creature was deadlier than any foe I'd faced, that if we struck at night when she was strongest, she could butcher us all. But the idea that we were baiting our snare with one of these poor painted fools was a stone in my belly. I watched the cold blood circle the room, enchanting all about her. These folk had no knowing of the evil among them, instead drawn toward it like moths to flame. But standing watch by the entrance, I noted another, surveying the ballroom just as I did. A dark-haired youth, a few years younger than I in appearance, clad in black velvet and pearl thread. The one who posed as Marianne's son, I realized. Adrien. He was beautiful. Timeless. And as our eyes met, I felt the press of his mind into mine, gentle as a first kiss. It was the strangest sensation, as if cold fingertips brushed my scalp, pushing through the jelly-soft dome of my skull. I crowded my thoughts, as Talon had taught me, throwing up complaints about sore feet and the boorish manners of the noble-born. But the thing's eyes flickered to my doublet, the weapons beneath. It could tell something was amiss. Perhaps not what I was, but certainly that I was no mere sheep. He looked to the dance floor, dark eyes fixed on the one who'd made him. And though Marianne Lunquois' demeanor changed not at all, I saw her exchange a swift glance with her spawn. Something passed between them, and her black eyes fell on me, and I felt her see me, as if I were stripped naked and bare before God himself. Without a word, Adrien was gone, slipping off through the crowd like a knife. I looked to Greyhand, to Seraph Talon, not knowing whether to pursue or stand my ground. Marianne was moving now, a young girl spellbound on her arm, sweeping toward the doors as the guests parted before her like water. My master had told me to do nothing but watch. Talon had given express order to follow our quarry to ground. I wanted to prove myself worthy. I wanted to be a brother of the Silver Order, and I knew after my disobedience in Skyfall, the revelation of my strange blood gifts, I was already dancing on a precipice. But I watched this monster approach, and I saw the lass in her embrace had hair the gold of autumn leaves. Aaron's cousin, Véronique. I thought of my sister Amélie then, of my vow to Astrid that if I could spare one more mother the pain of what mine had suffered, I'd do it gladly. I didn't want to be a hero, nor a fool. But neither did I want to become as monstrous as these things we hunted. Véronique was barely 15. Amélie would have been that age now. Perhaps I could have turned away, done what I was fucking told just once if I didn't know her damn name. But this girl's whole life lay ahead of her. Or no life at all. "Help me, God," I whispered. "Help me, please." I felt a heat then, burning and silvered in my hand and upon my chest. And looking down at my palm, I saw my 7-star had begun to glow. I clung to that spreading warmth, filling my head with prayers to the Almighty. The leech drew closer, and I knew if I stood in her way, she'd shatter me like ice. But I could feel the breath of God upon my neck, silver burning in my skin. Reaching into my doublet, I drew my silver steel dagger, loosed my collar, and I stepped into the vampire's path, palm out, burning with cold, blue-white light. "Stop. In the Almighty's name." "De Leon," Talon roared. "Damn you, boy." The vampire narrowed her eyes. The music failed. Folk about me gasping. In the pale light blazing from my hand, at my throat, Lunquois somehow seemed not so beautiful anymore. The monster spoke, and I was unsure if her voice rang only in my mind. "No power hath the Almighty over me, child." Where before I'd felt the soft press of the boy thing in my mind, now I felt a hammer blow, rummaging in my thoughts. I pushed back, trying to force her out as Greyhand and Talon came on through the crowd. The vampire took one step toward me, and the light in my palm flared so bright it made her flinch. Véronique blinked hard. The spell over her eyes burned away as she shrank in the monster's iron grip. "Release her," I spat. "By the blood of the Redeemer, I command it." I could see the dark fury in Lun Kua deepening as she took another step toward me. This was a creature old as centuries. I was an insect beside her. And yet with God beside me, I stood 1,000 feet tall. Light blazing before her, Talon and Greyhand rushing at her back, the vampire flung Veronique at the wall like a rag doll. I cried out, diving and snatching the lass from the air as the force slammed us both backward into the stone. The vampire moved in a blur, smashing onlookers aside and crashing through the ballroom windows. Shattered glass rained to the floor as Greyhand and Talon flew after her into the night.
"Murder!" came a cry. "Murder, by God!"
I shook my head to clear it, blinking about me. I saw one of the house gendarmes staggering into the hall, the body of a serving lass in his arms. The girl was dead, drained, pale as ash, twin punctures at her throat. The crowd about me gasped in horror.
"No, nobody of consequence, eh?"
Veronique moaned in my arms. With a moment to check on the bewildered lass, I pursued my master and Talon, flying through the broken window. I could see Aaron by the carriages, struggling with a tall bearded man. Greyhand charged through the bailey, past bewildered soldiers, Talon behind, both swift as hawks with the sacrament they'd smoked. Running to Aaron's side, I slammed my dagger's pommel into the thrall's head, allowing the lordling to lock up the man's arm and hurl him into the ground. I saw Aaron's doublet was soaked with blood. Clumsy with drink, the lordling had earned himself a stabbing. But he seemed more furious than pained.
"Damned bastard," he spat,
putting his boot to the thrall's head.
"Are you well?"
I gasped, looking at his bloodied clothes.
"Unknot your gizzards, you quivering peon."
He winced, pressing his chest with one bloody hand.
"What in God's name happened in there?"
"Lun Kua spotted me. That's to say I..."
Dacos met my eyes.
"Oh, Mother May de Leon, you fucking didn't..."
My stomach sank. I'd no regrets, but I knew my disobedience had landed me hip deep in shite again. I heard a rush of footsteps, felt someone seize my throat. I was slammed back into the carriage, black stars bursting in my eyes. A fist struck my stomach, another blow cracked the side of my head so hard it almost popped my jaw loose. Blood in my mouth, I collapsed to the cobbles, crying out as a boot collided with my ribs.
"You ship-lodded little ass grubber," Talon spat. "I should have drugged you to Heaven's Bridge when I had the chance. You just cost us our fucking quarry."
I pulled myself up to my elbows, spitting blood.
"I just saved a girl's life."
"And ended untold others."
Master Greyhand's stoic mask was abandoned, his fangs grown long as he loomed above me, drawing his silver steel sword.
"What did I tell you, boy? What did I say would happen if ever you disobeyed me again?"
Feastgoers had gathered out front of the manor house. Aaron looked to the steps, saw his cousin among the throng, her silken dress torn, her autumn hair in disarray. The Baron and Baron themselves looked on as Greyhand raised his blade. But God had stood with me as I stared down that monster. He'd willed me to save that girl's life. Surely he'd not abandon me now. Dull moon's light glinted on silver steel, all my life flashing before my eyes. And as the sword began to fall, Aaron stepped into Greyhand's path.
"Master, stop."
Greyhand held still, glowering as Dacoste pointed to the unconscious thrall.
"This bastard spilled where they nest, an estate near Falls Bridge on the Silver Lane. If we move with haste, we can burn them out before they escape. Presuming their return there, having now been discovered," Talon spat, "and presuming Lun Kua does not tear us to pieces before ere the sun rises. All the more reason to spare this idiot."
Aaron glanced to his cousin, back down to me. "At least for now. We'll need every blade we can muster to best this foe." Greyhand and Talon exchanged blood-red glances. I saw my master's grip on his sword tighten. He was so close to letting that blow fall, I could taste it. But in the end, he glanced to the gentry and soldiers about us, then to Aaron, standing now his way.
"You'd best pray God that Initiate Dacoste is right, de Leon," Greyhand growled. "Because if this monster and her brood elude us,
every murder they commit thereafter is a stain upon your soul. And whatever happens tonight, when we return to Saint Michon, there will be a reckoning. Mark my words, boy. You will never hunt as my apprentice again.
I hung my head, nodded slow.
Oui, master.
Greyhand sheathed his sword. Talon turned back to the keep, eyes red as blood.
Gather your gear, brothers. We have a leech to kill.
Chapter 5 The Age of the Fall. I lay on a rooftop in the Silver Lane with Aaron, both of us peering over the roof's ridge. The cobbles below were packed with feastgoers, their music and laughter muted by the rush of the nearby waterfall. But the estate across the way was pitch dark, all too silent. Archer sat on an iron weather vane nearby, watching me like a hawk.
Jean-François quirked his lip. A falcon watching you like a hawk? Truly, De Lion, your wordsmithery is a marvel to behold. My story, Coldblood. I'll tell it how I like.
Gabriel finished off his wine and wiped his lips. And for your information, wordsmithery isn't a real word.
Nor is fuckassery, but you hear no complaints from me.
Strange. I swear that's exactly what I just heard. Now, can I tell my tale or no?
Jean-François sighed. As you like it, Silver Saint.
Gabriel topped up his glass, tapping his chin.
So, with no knowing if Lun Kua or her brood had returned here after the keep, but we had no other trail to follow.
Aaron kept his eyes on the estate, stuffing his pipe with the Sanctus entrusted to him by Greyhand. Guilt was gnawing at me as he lit his flint box, dragged a deep draught into his lungs. I wondered again if our master was right, if my disobedience had saved one life only to cost hundreds more. But moreover, I was harboring another guilt besides. I knew it made no sense for Decoste to have stepped up to my defense if he were behind the attack in the Saint-Michon stables. If Aaron truly wanted me dead, he could have just shut his mouth and let Greyhand's sword fall. Despite how bad I wanted it to be true, maybe I'd been wrong about him. Perhaps someone else had set Lacour free. Or perhaps she'd just broken free herself, as Talon always claimed. So why the fuck had Aaron been sneaking around the armory that night? When the lordling opened his eyes, I saw them washed red, irises almost swallowed by his pupils. I nodded as he handed me the pipe.
Merci.
You're welcome, peasant.
No, I mean, for standing up to Greyhand on my behalf.
Merci, Decoste. Aaron's eyes were back on the house, his breath coming like a racehorse's. But the Sanctus seemed to have sobered him up, at least.
You're an idiot, De Leon. A stubborn ass who thinks he knows better than men who have hunted these monsters for years. And that vanity is going to get you killed.
He glanced my way briefly. But you saved my cousin's life.
Famille is famille.
Now hurry up. They're already moving. Aaron spoke truth. I could see the dark silhouettes of Greyhand and Talon converging on the wrought iron fence surrounding the estate. And so I drew a boiling red dose into my lungs, momentarily overcome with the rush of it, the thrum of it, uncoiling along my edges and filling every inch of me. And then we were moving, past the astonished merrymakers, burning torches and silver steel in hand as we reached the estate doors and blew them in like storm winds. Bloodstains on the carpet, spatters on the wall. A dead servant lay on a chaise longue, our torchlight glittering on crystal chandeliers as we swept through the house. Greyhand and Talon were silver-clad, tunics and greatcoats stripped off, but I could see no light in their inkwork, nor feel any heat in my own aegis. Greyhand descended into the cellar while Talon combed the lower level. Side by side, Aaron and I climbed the grand staircase. We split up, fanning out across the landing. I burst into what looked like the master boudoir, saw an elderly woman in the bed, red spatters on silk sheets. I knew she'd been slain earlier,
that there was nothing I could have done to prevent this carnage. But the monsters who'd murdered these people were still at large. With every passing moment, the certainty that they'd eluded us was growing, and guilt over the ones they'd killed tomorrow night, the nights after, weighed heavier on me with every step. I heard a cry from Aaron, a thumping crash. I spun on my heel, dashing down the hall and bursting into a luxurious study. DeCoste was on the floor, wrestling with a broad Sudeyami man. The fellow was twice Aaron's weight and obviously a thrall. Even with a dose of Sanctus in him, DeCoste was struggling. I put a kick into the big man's head, locked up one of his arms as Aaron seized his throat. And looking into the fellow's eyes, DeCoste hissed, "Be still now." The thrall groaned, trying to throw off the compulsion, but by then, Greyhand and Talon had arrived. The man was brought to heel, Talon and I leaning on his arms as Greyhand sat atop his chest, a silver dagger to his throat.
"Get off me, god pig," the man roared. "Where is your mistress?" Greyhand growled, pressing with his dagger. "Speak."
The man hawked a mouthful of spit into Greyhand's face. Our master broke his nose with his dagger's pommel, glanced to DeCoste.
"Find her."
Aaron nodded, kneeling beside the thrall's head. The man tried to close his eyes and turn away, but Aaron held him still.
"Tell us where your mistress is."
At the same time, Talon put his hand across the man's brow, eyes narrowed as he forced his way into the fellow's thoughts. I felt that familiar jealousy, seeing blood gifts at work while I stood there, useless as balls on a priest. The thrall bucked and hissed, the blood from his broken nose lighting up the thirst inside me. He tried his best to resist. If Aaron and Talon were mere inquisitors with something as mundane as a rack or wheel, I'm certain the thrall would never have broken. But in the end, the blood won through.
"The bridge," Talon said, looking up. "They're at the Falls Bridge."
"Why?" Greyhand demanded.
"Why not simply flee?"
"Because you're too late," the thrall roared. "All that needs be known is known. The master comes, you fucking god pigs, and blood and fire shall mark his passing."
Greyhand's fist crashed into the thrall's jaw, leaving him slack and senseless.
"This riddle makes no sense." "We'll learn the truth of it," Talon spat, "when we bring this unholy beast to ground."
The four of us flew into the streets, barreling down packed thoroughfares. Aaron led us like an arrow, past dancing revelers and wandering lovers, toward the river cutting the city in two. Grey snow tumbled from the skies. Archer cut the dark with a piercing cry. Aaron slipped his coat from his shoulders, tearing off his tunic and leaving his tattoos bare. I stuffed Astrid's portrait into my breeches and followed suit. All four of us were silver-clad now, but the Sanctus kept the chill away, the thought of what was to come rushing like fire through my veins. As we reached the Falls Bridge, I glanced at Greyhand and saw that glow in the silver on his skin, the telltale sign that evil was near and God rode with us. The waterfall was a rushing roar now, but above it, I heard laughter in the crowd ahead. My heart was pounding a hammer song as we pushed through the mob and finally, miraculously, saw our prey before us. The vampire we'd stalked since skyfall. Marianne Lunqua. The Falls Bridge was dark stone, the railings lined with brass statues of saints and angels. She stood among them, all in red, her child Adrian at her side. A mob of drink-sodden feastgoers were gathered about her, cheering as she opened her hand like some corner magician and released a white raven into the air. The bird was beautiful, cutting down into the freezing spray and back up into the night. Three cages were lined up along the rail, two already empty. Squinting into the sky, I saw more birds winging westward over Raphael's Peak, and my heart sank in my chest as I realized what they were.
"Messengers," I breathed.
A sharp cry split the air, and a thrall with a battle axe came at me through the crowd. I met the blow with Lion Claw, the mob about me screaming. Blood sprayed as I struck back, kicking the fellow in the chest and tumbling him across the cobbles. A swarthy lad with lank hair was hewing at Talon with a broadsword, Aaron whipping out his wheel lock and unloading into the face of a Sudeami man charging him with punching daggers. The crowd roared again as the shot rang out, Greyhand bellowing over the panic.
"Fly! For the love of God and the sake of your souls, fly!"
The crowd scattered as I plunged my sword into the big thrall's belly. All the world was moving as if in a dream, the Sanctus rushing in my veins. The thrall's axe cracked the cobbles as I stepped aside. His jaw broke loose as I buried my pommel into his face. As the blood and teeth flew, I wondered if this man even understood what he was doing. If the poison he'd swallowed from his dark mistress's wrist allowed him the luxury of fear or regret, or simply made him a slave to her ancient will, dying for the only god that mattered. But die he did, gasping his last at the end of my sword as the Maximilla's Day revelers fled screaming, leaving only us and two monsters in the middle of the falls bridge. Grey snow swirled about us in freezing eddies. Grey water rushed below us, over that frozen edge. Marianne Lunqua opened her hands again, releasing yet another white raven into the night, and I saw a small scroll of parchment tied to its leg with a bow of black ribbon. Her cages were empty now. Her stare, too, as she turned to us, perilous and beautiful. Long flaming hair framed her face, somehow untouched by the howling wind. Her skin was white and hard as marble. And perhaps it was a trick of the light, but looking to the cobbles beneath her, it seemed she cast no shadow at all. "Too late art thou, O children," she said. "All that needs be known is known, and now he shall know it too. Rejoice," the child gifted me a dark smile. "The age of the fall has begun." I glanced to the white ravens soaring westward, and I knew with awful certainty where they were headed, who he was. The lion on my chest and the seven star in my palm burned with divine heat, warming my blood. And frightening and otherworldly as these two were, I could see the way their eyes narrowed as we closed about them. The way the boy's lip curled as a soft hiss slipped between his fangs. "Long nights hast thou hurried my steps," the woman whispered to Greyhand. "Felt thee, like lips gentle on back of my shivering neck. And here thou art, my beautiful hunter." She held out her arms. "Kiss me." "The Lord is my shield, unbreakable," Greyhand spat. "He is the fire that burns away all darkness. He is the tempest rising that shall lift me unto paradise." The Freya stepped forward, and the vampire edged back. Her chin was lowered, lashes fluttering as if somehow delighted by the pain that holy light caused her. Her ruby lips curled in a smile that was almost affectionate. "I know thee, Silver Saints, Talon de Montfort, Aaron de Coste, Gabriel de Leon." "Listen to nothing she says," Talon warned. "If the keeping of thy names have I, wouldst thou not know mine?" She ran her hands over the pale swell of her breasts, down to her hips as she smiled at Greyhand. "What name shalt thou whisper otherwise, Aramis Charpentier, when I love thee?" "We know your name, Lunqua, Ravenchild, hardly the deepest of riddles, Voss."
The monster smiled, sly and wicked as she spoke the creed of her line. "All shall kneel, good Freya." She moved then, murder quick into Greyhand's light. Though the glow narrowed her eyes, curled her lip, still she struck, swift as a thunderclap. Greyhand gasped, bending backward as diamond-hard fingernails whistled past his throat. Her other hand struck him in his chest, her flesh sizzling, sending him sailing back across the bridge as if he were made of feathers. I cried out as my master struck the railing, smashing the stone to dust and collapsing to his knees. Greyhand was back on his feet in a blinking, charging toward Lunqua. But the boy was moving too now, fast as a serpent's tongue. He drew a wicked dagger from his doublet in one hand, a wheel-lock pistol in the other. I cried out as he struck the trigger. Aaron whipped sideways as the shot hit him in the chest. And then the boy was flying at me. He slipped beneath the silver bomb I hold, silhouetted in the explosion behind him.
I danced backward, keeping him at bay with Lion Claw as Seraph Talon charged Lunqua's back. Muscle memory kicked in, the countless hours of sparring entwined with the blood hymn in my veins. But I fought High Bloods now, the foes I'd heard so much of but had never truly faced. They moved hurricane swift, and even though the light from our ink made that beautiful dead boy grimace in pain, still he came on. I hurled another silver bomb, swung my blade. I put all I had behind the blow, but though Lion Claw found Adrian's neck, his flesh was stone, and his knife quicksilver as he struck back, too fast to follow. I staggered, hitting the flagstones, blood in my mouth. Adrian's shadow fell over me, and I saw death reach out its hand. But the flesh at his wrist cracked like glass as Aaron's blade crashed atop it, and Adrian hissed, slipping aside from the burning brand DeCoste thrust toward his chest. Aaron struck again, silver steel sliding along the boy's cheek, trimming his dark locks. The vampire flashed backward, one hand to his bloody face, the other still holding his bloody knife. DeCoste stood guard over me, eyes lit by his burning torch. A bleeding hole was torn in his chest, angels of the host burning silver on his arms. "Are you well?" he hissed, eyes still on the glowering boy. I looked down at my belly, realized Adrian had stabbed me a dozen times. "Not really." "Take your time, peasant," DeCoste smirked, spitting blood. "I'll have this dance." Aaron charged the vampire, the pair moving like water and pale shadow in the silver light. Looking behind us, I saw Greyhand and Talon still entwined with the Ancien, just a blur. The stink of igneous and silver caustic hung in the air, silver bombs roaring, flails and blades gleaming. The woman moved between them like a bloody knife, the red of her dress and hair and lips the only color in the silvered glow. "Back!" Greyhand roared, cutting the air. "Say please," she smiled, cutting his arm with those wicked claws. "We are the light in the night," Talon cried, lashing out with his flail. "We are the fire that rages between this and all worlds ending. Kiss me then, Hunter, and see who of us burns." Lunqua tore one of the brass statues loose from the railing, brandished it like a club. Greyhand was knocked aside, senseless and bleeding. Bringing back her arm, Lunqua hurled the statue like a spear. Talon cried out as the angel struck him, crushing him against the railing with enough force to kill any mortal man. I dragged myself upright, blood filling my boots, Lion Claw slack in my hand. Talon was on his knees, but Greyhand was back in the fray, coming at Lunqua like a thunderbolt. And so I staggered back to help Aaron. For all his bravado, he was outmatched against that darkling boy, and wounded as I was, another sword might tip the scale. DeCoste thrust his blade into the vampire's side, and I heard a sound more like cracking stone than splitting flesh. Jarred from his grip, Aaron Silversteel fell to the cobbles. Adrian's riposte ripped a red gash up the boy's ribs, through the weave of roses on his chest. Clutching the awful wound, Aaron stumbled to his knees. "Close your eyes," he whispered, and the dead boy only laughed. Adrian lunged at DeCoste, the dagger speeding toward Aaron's heart, and then I was on him, crushing into the vampire's chest and sending the both of us tumbling across the bridge. We hit the cobbles hard, a gong ringing in my ears as my head cracked the stone. "Insect," Adrian spat, turning on me. "Cattle." I gasped as gore-slick hands closed about my throat, Adrian's flesh sizzling on the silver as he smashed my head back against the stone. I thrust my left hand into his face, rewarded with a wail of pain as light flared, as the warmth of God flowed up my arm and into my heart. The thing flinched backward, hissing, and in a desperate stab I lunged upward and kicked him away into the shattered railing. The boy flailed, arms pinwheeling as he tried to find his balance. Bleeding, his ribs torn to the bone, Aaron snatched up his fallen sword. The lordling hissed in his rage, fangs bared, and with one final blow to Adrian's chest, DeCoste sent the monster backward over the rail and into the freezing river below. I knew vampires couldn't cross running water, but I'd no idea what happened if they were submerged in it. Adrian began screaming, thrashing, as if he'd been tossed into a river of burning lye. The current swept the monster toward the falls, alabaster flesh running to soup and washing off his bones as he was hurled over that frozen brink.
Adrian, came a scream. No.
I turned toward Lunqua, saw her eyes filled with fury. Greyhand took advantage, calling out to heaven as he brought his blade in a whistling arc across her throat. It was a blow that would have split an anvil in two, and the vampire's flesh shattered like ice. And she was an Ironheart, ancient of the Blood Voss. And I saw now the terrible peril Greyhand was in. By risking his death blow, our master had left himself off balance. Bone-white fingers closed about his throat, sizzling on the silver. Her claws tore into the side of his head, ripped his ear clean off his skull, broke his jaw, popped his right eye like a rotten egg.
Master!
I shouted, running forward. The vampire seized Greyhand's wrist, flinging him down onto the stone so hard the flagstone shattered. Greyhand cried out, blood on his lips. Lunqua slung him like a bag of rocks. Once, twice, twisting as she did so. I heard bone breaking, saw Greyhand's red eyes wide with agony. And then he roared, head thrown back as the vampire thrust her heel against his chest and leaned away, tearing his sword arm out at the root. Holy God, I breathed, skidding to a halt. Talon staggered upright, bleeding from the eyes and ears. His shoulder was broken, chest staved in, left arm bloody at his side. DaCosta and I joined him, gasping for breath. Aaron's skin was pocked with a half dozen wounds, blonde hair plastered to bloodied cheeks. Greyhand lay broken on the cobbles as the vampire turned to us, tossing my master's severed arm over the railing and into the river below.
What do we do, Seraph? Aaron wheezed.
Talon shook his head, teeth red with blood.
I don't.
We can't abandon Greyhand, I whispered. The three of us can take her. The vampire laughed then. Her skin was spattered crimson, eyes searching mine as she raised her hand and licked the blood from her blackened fingers.
Take me?
The snow landed on her skin as if she were a statue. Her dress flowed about her like red smoke. She came to a halt at the edge of our light, beautiful and terrible, and she spoke with a voice that quickened my blood.
I am never taken. I only take. Such is the province of a prince of forever.
My heart dropped in my chest as realization sank home.
Lunqua, I whispered. Raven child. His child,
Talon breathed. I saw the Seraph's face growing paler, Aaron's bloodied sword tremble in his hand. We'd known the monster we hunted was powerful, but we never imagined. This thing had been old when the Empire was young, the Red Sovereign of centuries of slaughter. And I whispered then, my voice quaking, the name of this beast we'd hunted since Skyfall, this vampire who now hunted us.
Lor Voss.
Chapter 6 Where Mortal Girls Fear to Tread.
Lor Voss, favored daughter of the Forever King. I remembered the tales I'd heard of her around the fireside. A terror of the night. A true ancient. When the walls of Valen had fallen to her father's endless legion, Lor had gathered every infant in the city, snatching them from cribs and wailing mothers' arms like some horror from a tall fireside tale. She'd opened them up like Saints' Day gifts and poured their blood into the fountain in Valen's square. And then she'd fucking bathed in it. The wraith in red. My hand was raised before me, Aaron's also, and our inkwork burned with a holy glow, keeping the vampire at bay. But I'd only one silver bomb left. Our wheel locks were empty. With Talon so badly wounded, Aaron and I only initiates, we stood little chance against a monster of such dreadful power. Greyhand watched from where he'd fallen, the three of us huddled in our circle of light.
No, no heroes, he whispered. Run.
Talon weeds through bloodied lips. I fear this foe is beyond us.
The cathedral, Aaron nodded behind us. Holy ground.
We can't leave Greyhand, I hissed.
Thou shouldst leave him, Law turned her eyes on me. As ye left her.
My belly twisted as I felt the vampire push her way into my head. I tried to keep her out as Talon had taught me, but my defenses crumbled under the weight of countless years.
I see her, frail blood, Law whispered. That sweet daughter of Lorsan, floating beside thee like a shadow. I smell her, dripping like blood from thy guilty hands. If thou hadst but been there, ye might have protected her. If thou hadst but gone with her into the woods that day, as she asked thee, thy sister Amelie might still be alive.
Law's eyes bore into mine, and her voice was a knife in my chest.
Instead, she met me.
My belly thrilled with rage, fangs stirring in my gums.
You fucking lie.
Law Voss tilted her hand.
Do I?
Don't listen, Aaron warned. Dead tongues heeded are dead tongues tasted.
Ah, oui,
the vampire breathed, circling our light.
Aaron d'Acoste, noble blood pumped by a coward's heart. Dost thou fear me, boy lover? Just as thou feared thy stepfather when he found thee entwined in thy love's bed, sweating and spent.
I saw d'Acoste tense at that, fists clenching.
Thy pretty Sasha loved thee, pleading on both knees before the Baron, and thou didst nothing to intercede. Instead, ye threw thy love to the wolf to save thyself his bite.
Silence! Aaron hissed, fangs glinting. That's not true!
It's not my fault, Papa,
Law wheedled, hand to her breast.
I didn't want it. Sasha made me, Papa. Sasha forced me.
Silence! Aaron raised his sword, the light dimming as both hands closed about the grip. Only the radiance from my own palm remained now, and the ink on our chests and arms. The circle shrinking, her eyes narrowing.
D'Acoste, stand your ground, Talon cried. She wants you to fight her. Stay in the circle. In God's light we are stronger together.
Laura only laughed.
Think thee, thy God shall save thee from me.
Talon winced, fangs bared.
Get out of my head, bitch.
We are thy punishment, Seraph, and thy God shall not spare thee. He abhors thee and everything thou art.
Her head tilted, lips curling.
And I would make thee love me, Talon de Montfort. I would promise thee pleasure no chaste and holy brother could dream of. But I see it now, behind thy blood-soaked eyes, upon thy blood-soaked hands.
The vampire smiled.
Thou art already ours, pale blood. Thy little Aoife could testify to...
And that was it. I cried warning, but Talon just fucking snapped, charging in, Aaron beside him. And though I stepped forward, light blazing, still Law Voss opened her arms. She slipped aside Talon's flail, moved swifter than a humming fly past Aaron's sword. Her right hand tore through the Seraph's guard, twisting his good arm so brutally the bone burst through his skin. Her other hand collided with his belly, claws tearing deep. She threw Talon backward, loops of entrails spilling from the gaping wound. Aaron lunged with a bellow to the Almighty, aiming at the wound Greyhand had already begun. And at last, the blade broke through, sundering that marble finish and opening Law's neck wide. But the Prince of Forever struck back, and I cried out as those diamond-hard nails tore through Aaron's face, opening the lordling's cheek to the bone. I heard d'Acoste's ribs shatter as a blow struck his chest, sending him sailing back across the bridge.
D'Acoste! Gabriel!
I turned toward the vampire, once more circling the outskirts of my light. I was alone now, in an ocean of darkness. I remembered Skyfall, the blood of little Claude de Blanchette boiling under my hand. But if that gift was still mine, I'd no clue how to conjure it. Law's eyes were fixed on me, framed by flame-red hair, lips parted ever so slight.
She ran her tongue along her teeth, bloody fingertips across the gaping wound in her throat, roaming down the hourglass of her body and pressing hard between her legs.
I feel the want in thee, frail blood. I feel the fear. I know what thou didst to thy poor Ilse, thy terror, that ye might do the same to thy dear Astrid. But no weak and feeble flesh have I to break upon thy stone. Thou canst hurt me, Gabriel, as much as ye want.
She was hideous. She was evil incarnate. But God help me, she was beautiful and dark as the end of all days. I swallowed hard, thinking of Ilse's blood pulsing into my mouth, the perfume of Astrid's blood in the air. Law prowled back and forth before me, but I swear I could feel her behind me, hands running down my bare chest, my belly, lower and lower still. She looked at the pocket where Astrid's portrait was folded, biting her lip and shivering as her teeth cut deep, blood on her mouth.
Let me kiss thee, Gabriel. Let me kiss thee in places mortal girls fear to tread.
I looked to my comrades, the fallen swords and broken bones. I could have run, turned my back and fled to the cathedral, even now tolling the turn to San Maximilia's day. But to retreat was to leave my brothers to their deaths.
It shall be bliss, Law promised. I shall be the goddess ye die for.
And looking at those bright red lips, those slender hands and bloody curves, I wondered again what it might be like to die in pleasure instead of pain. How it might actually feel to have those teeth slip into my skin, taken instead of taking.
Kiss me. Just once, Gabriel. Kiss me.
I felt my hand falling to my side, the light about me fading, only the lion on my chest burning now, dim and water-thin. The vampire's smile widened and she stepped closer. Her throat was shattered where Aaron and Greyhand had driven their blades into her flesh, and I could feel the chill off her skin, smell the blood and death and dirt as she enfolded me in her arms. Her lips drifted close and closer to mine. My whole body thrilled at her touch. And mouthing a prayer to the Almighty, I struck the fuse on my final silver bomb and pushed it through the wound in her neck. The explosion tore through her body, blasting me backward. Silver fire scorched Law's flesh, turning marble to ebony. Her shoulder and throat split apart, a blow no ordinary cold blood could have withstood. But though she staggered, still that unholy bitch didn't fall, face twisted with pain and fear as her beautiful silken dress caught fire. I dragged myself upward as the flames took hold, and Law began to scream as I skidded to my knees at Greyhand's side. My master was unconscious, but still he breathed, and I slung him over my back as Law whirled and shrieked, tearing at her dress before she became a pillar of flame. Next I ran to Talon, the Seraph gasping with agony as I hauled him up. Come on! At last, I reached Dacost, his face ripped bloody, his chest shredded. Lifting him under one arm, Talon beside me and Greyhand over my shoulder, we ran. Down cobbled streets, past terrified townsfolk, and finally, out into the grand square. And there it stood, midnight tolling in the belfry, a circle of marble and gothic spires, reaching up to the heaven that had perhaps not yet abandoned us. Cost Cathedral. I kicked open the doors, staggered onto holy ground. Talon slumped across the threshold, his stomach a torn and bleeding mess. I lowered Greyhand to the floor, propping Aaron against the wall and pressing my hand to his bloody brow. Dacost, I whispered. Do you hear me?
I hear thee.
My belly filled with ice as I turned to the square outside. And there she stood, naked and blackened. The once flawless alabaster of her skin was a ruin, bone gleaming beneath the shattered facade. Her flame-red hair was ashes, but still, still, Law lived.
There is no god that shall save thee from me, she vowed. I am a prince of forever, and forever shall I hunt thee. All thou hast shall I take, all thou art shall I unmake, and in the end I shall have thee on thy knees, frail blood, I shall taste thee unto dying.
Law glanced down the street toward the sound of ringing horns, iron-shod boots on snow-clad stone. Baron Dacost had at last mustered his men, soldiers with burning pitch and blazing torches,
Wounded as she was, the vampire could still have sown ruin among them like a farmer in the fields. But in truth, she had no need to fight. She'd already done what she came to Kost to do. And after all, she could wait forever.
All shall kneel.
She was gone. A blink and she no longer stood there, leaving the square abandoned. My mouth was dust, hands shaking. But against impossible odds, we lived.
Foolish little bastard.
I looked to Greyhand, the wreckage of his face, the slow bleeding gouge where his sword arm used to be. I searched about us, tearing a tapestry from the cathedral wall to wrap around his shoulders. He was pale blood, and the bleeding wouldn't kill him. But the fact that he was conscious at all proved how deep the silver ran in his bones.
I told you to run, he whispered. Disobedience will be the death of you, boy.
I looked to Aaron, to Talon, to my master. All of us such strange bedfellows, with little in common save the sin of our birth. But still. Perhaps so, master, but my brothers are the hill I die on. Aaron managed a sneer. His wounds cut down over his brow and through his cheek, ripped by Law's talons. I knew he'd carry that scar the rest of his life.
Fine sentiment, but I can't help noticing you're not dead, De Leon.
There's always tomorrow. My eyes returned to the place Law Voss had stood, her promise still hanging in the air. This hunt isn't over.
But so far, all for naught. We've still no idea why she was here.
A shrill cry split the night. I looked at the cathedral square, saw the first of the Baron's men moving in, swords and burning torches in hand. But above their heads, a grey falcon swooped out of the dark. Archer wheeled once, then flew in through the cathedral doors, wings whipping the blood-soaked hair about my face. Wounded as he was, Greyhand managed to smile, and I sighed in wonder when I saw what Archer carried in his talons. A dead white raven.
Clever boy, Greyhand nodded. My clever, clever boy.
The falcon rasped as I crawled over to his prize. I unpicked the black bow, unfurled the strip of parchment bound to the dead raven's leg. Looking over the message, I saw it was a tiny map of the Godsend Mountains, painted in an exquisite hand. Fine, flowing script detailed the towns that dotted the range. Population, assets, garrisons of men. Black arrows swept down from the north, pointing toward Kost, Tolbrook, Skyfall, and then out into the Nordland itself. And despite my wounds, I came to my feet, blood running cold as I realized what I held in my shaking hands.
De Leon, Talon whispered. What is it?
I looked to my fellows, uncertain whether to be overjoyed or horrified.
An invasion plan,